Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Contending for Truth. I just want to say thank you to Scott Osborne. It was his ideas that created this show, and I want to start off by thanking you, Scott, who will be handling our phone call this evening. If you want to call in and talk to the host, you just want to listen, or you want to make some comments. You know, this government shutdown, I just spent the weekend at the Republican State Convention in Anaheim. And amongst other things, for starters, they let the Tea Party in finally, or as I like to put it, welcomed home our Constitution-loving Republicans back to the party, because that's where it all started at. But it just, hearing all of the political spin, I am so absolutely, I say this, I'm sick of Fox, I'm sick of CNN, I'm sick of our Congress people standing up there pandering to the camera, trying to get their point across. So tonight, we're doing the throwdown on the showdown. I don't want to hear political spin. I don't want to hear, well, George Bush did it. Well, but Reagan did it. But, well, Clinton did it. I don't want to hear they all. I don't want to hear it always. I don't want to hear it's everybody. It's a small group of people. It's not the Tea Party. It's not the Tea Party's fault. It's not Republicans. This all falls on our president, Barack Obama, period. Okay? I start off, let's just get the BS out of the way. Since, I got my notes here, since 1981 alone, Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., and Obama have all raised the debt ceiling. Everybody does it. It's not a party. It's not something new. It's not something revolutionary. And actually, since 1978, 53 times the debt ceiling has been raised, 29 times by a Democrat-controlled Congress, 17 times by a split Congress, 7 times by a GOP-controlled Congress. Of those 53 times, only 26 of them were a quote-unquote, here's the big word, clean resolution with no strings attached. Every other one had some form of a attachment to it, okay? This has been going back. 1835 is the only year in our history of this country that we never had a debt. So debts are not new. In January 1st, 1791, we were $75 million. $463,476.52 in debt. Every president since Hoover has raised the debt ceiling. It's been raised 74 times since March of 1962, 15 times by Reagan, 8 by Clinton, 7 by GWB, 3 by Barack Obama. The problem is, every single issue, we are talking about health care, the debt ceiling, the government shutdown. It is all BS because everybody else in America has to pass a budget. The debt ceiling itself, okay, and I'm actually quoting from a left-wing newspaper article here. Let's see here. The process of the debt ceiling is separate and distinct from the regular process of financing government operations. Raising the debt ceiling neither directly increases nor decreases the budget deficit. U.S. government passes a federal budget every year. The budget details projected tax collections and outlays and, therefore, the amount of borrowing the government would have to do in that fiscal year. Here's the problem. Since 2009, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi have not passed a budget. 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, they have not passed a budget. Period. Okay? A vote to increase the debt ceiling is therefore usually seen as a formality. It needed to continue spending that has already been approved previously by Congress and the President. The sky is falling is garbage. If we default on the debt ceiling, all it does is say you can't borrow money for previously incurred debt. Borrowing money for new debt doesn't have anything to do with it. The sky is not falling. Nobody's falling apart, okay? And then this is the part that really pisses me off. The Republicans shut down the government because they refuse to allow a clean resolution. Garbage. Here's break it down in the simplest form. I told my wife I want a sports car, I want a new laptop computer, and I want a new sound system. She told me I can have the sound system, I can have the new laptop, I cannot have the sports car. That's what Congress does. It is exclusively within the power of Congress to authorize spending. They authorized every dime required to run the federal government, but they said no to Obamacare. Right or wrong, it is constitutionally correct. And if I told my wife I want those three items, she tells me yes to laptop, yes to sound system, no to Corvette, and I go, I'm not taking any of them unless I get my Corvette. That doesn't mean she didn't tell me I can't have it. Brian, I understand you're on the air. Come on in. Brian. Or we have a caller. Caller, are you there? 530 area code. Okay. Well, when that caller's ready. You know, so the problem is quit listening to CNN, quit listening to all the garbage and all the pandering. I actually was on my flight home last night and with Charlie and Mandy and everybody, and there were two teachers or two ladies behind us that were Democrats, obviously. Charlie was talking Republican stuff, and you could see they were getting annoyed, and we started talking, and they even agree. In the old days, I remember Jim Brulte, Willie Brown. We'd fight all day long, and at 5 o'clock, Willie would say, let's go have a beer. We don't continue fighting. Done. We don't hate each other. We're not pandering on cameras. We go out, we have an evening. Next day, we go back to work and try and do what's best for the country, for California. It's just all this pandering is stupid. Stay off Twitter, stay off Facebook, stay your butt in Washington. You heard me say it last week. Lock them all in a room. It's like a papal conclave. When we see white smoke, you can come out. Whether we like it, don't like it, something got done. No one's allowed to go on TV or tweet until it's finished. So, do we have a caller? Caller? So, okay, until the caller wants to talk, we're going to go over a quick list here. There are bills that Congress has passed that fund the government. In the very first one, they completely funded everything but Obamacare. Since then, Friday, or let's go all the way back to the beginning here. Friday, September 20th, 2013, the House of Representatives passed a continuing resolution that would fully fund the government, including things Republicans don't like, while at the same time defunding Obamacare. The result, House Republicans compromised on spending that would like to see cut in exchange for defunding Obamacare. Right or wrong? I don't know. Some people like it, some don't. Bottom line, that's the Constitution of our United States. Congress is allowed to say yes and no. Friday, September 27th, the Senate stripped the defunding language out of the House, passed a continuing resolution, and sent it back to the House. Saturday, September 28th, House of Representatives added two amendments to the Senate revised continuing resolution to delay Obamacare for 1 year. Again, compromising. Far from what we were originally willing to agree to. And they wanted to repeal the medical tax, device tax. On Monday, September 30th, the Senate stripped the two amendments from the House passed continuing resolution and sent it back to the House. Monday, September 30th, House Representative responded by adding language to the continuing resolution to delay the individual mandate for a year and take away the health care subsidies members of Congress and their staff received from the Office of Personnel Management ruling earlier this year. Result, they compromised by delaying Obamacare, but also made their staff equal to the rest of America. Monday, September 30th, the Senate voted to table the House passed continuing resolution. Monday, September 30th, the House appointed conferees and sent a message to the Senate requesting a conference meeting to resolve the differences, something that happens quite often. Tuesday, October 1st, midnight, no deals reached, temporary shutdown begins. Tuesday, October 1st, the Senate votes to table the House's request for a conference to resolve the differences. Tuesday, October 1st, House of Representatives moves to start passing single authorization appropriation bills that needs two-thirds majority of the House for passage. Wednesday, October 2nd, the House passed bills to fund national parks and museums, D.C. operations, and National Institute of Health. The bottom line at this point, they're going, okay, we can't fund the whole government because you guys, but Harry Reid will not do it. And now they're shutting down a portion of the government, and we're going, okay, wait a minute, that one needs to stay open. That one should stay open. So we started trying to pass them individually. Okay. Wednesday, October 2nd, Senate Democrats unwilling to work with House Republicans. Thursday, October 3rd, the House of Representatives passed bills to fund National Guard, Military Reserve, and Veterans Affairs. I'm ex-Navy. My grandfather was Navy. My father was Marine. My son's a current Marine Corps enlisted. Fund the veterans, period. That should transcend politics. Thursday, October 3rd, the House of Representatives passed a bill to fund all of those. Friday, October 4th, Senate Democrats reject a unanimous consent request from Ted Cruz to take up bills that the House has passed to fund our National Guard, Military Reserve, and Veterans Affairs. Friday, October 4th, House of Representatives, led by Republican majority, passed a bill to fund FEMA and special supplemental nutrition programs for women, infants, and children. These bills, they've been passed. Republicans have authorized the money. The government could be open. From there, we can discuss all of your opinions on Obamacare, no Obamacare, the way it's happening. But the bottom line is, Democrats cannot stand there and tell me Republicans won't fund the government. Democrats will not accept the money. The government should be open. Paychecks should be flowing. There should be nobody furloughed. You know, on a separate note, I find it shocking that almost a million people are considered not necessary to run our government. And it's like, how big has our government gotten? Do we have a caller? Caller? Okay, so when Reagan was in office in 81 to 88, he had a split Congress for six of the years, Democrat-controlled Congress for 2 years. Debt ceiling was raised seven times. George Bush Sr., 4 years in office, Democrat-controlled Congress, debt ceiling was raised three times. Clinton in office for 8 years, two of them with a Democrat-controlled Congress, two with a mixed Congress, and four with a Republican-controlled Congress. That ceiling was raised three times. George Bush Jr., 2 years GOP-controlled, 2 years mixed, 2 years GOP-controlled, 07-08, 2 years Democrat-controlled. It was raised 7 times. Obama, Democrat-controlled Congress and Senate, and it's been raised 3 times. I don't understand what's so shocking about this, America. All of this pandering on TV is garbage. Why is it happening? It needs to stop. Like I said, get off Twitter, get off Facebook, do your damn job, because we want to get this country back on track, and there should be the ability for these people to debate what's right, what's wrong, and not sit here doing this goofy, it's like a bunch of kids in a schoolyard, and you just want to go ahead and play that new game of duck, duck, tape. Lock them all up until they decide to do their job. Getting a text message here. I also want to know how anybody can tell me, but shutting down the television system for our troops overseas to watch football games. If anyone can explain to me how that's even, you know, considered what should be shut down, that is beyond unacceptable. The World War II Memorial is privately funded. National parks. Iwo Jima Memorial. The list goes on and on and on. 25 things, my list of 25 things. Let's see here. Treatment for children suffering from cancer. The World War II Memorial. Furloughed military chaplains who actually volunteered to work for free but were told they couldn't. This one I don't know about. Business stops in Florida Keys. Well, you know. Obama blacks out sports entertainment programming for overseas troops. Closes, and actually, I take that back. I'm not willing to say Obama did it himself. I don't know if it's the budget office, if it's someone in his administration. He could change it. He's the president. He's allowing it to happen. I'm not saying he did it individually. I'm not going to buy into the, it's all him. There's a whole administration working here. Closes the D-Day Memorial. Tries to close privately funded Mount Vernon. Over 1,000 privately managed parks that cost no money to run. This one, like the World War II Memorial, it was built using private money. It was not built using tax dollars. Closes self-sustaining colonial farm. It hasn't supported since 1980. Self-funded. State-run parks in Wisconsin. Vietnam Memorial. Versus Acadia Park in Maine. Historic restaurants opened during last shutdown forced to close. Philadelphia restaurants been forced to close its doors and turn away booked parties because of the government shutdown. Cuts down the road that goes through the Colorado Park. Come on. Blocks people from looking at Mount Rushmore. They not only shut down Mount Rushmore, they shut down the roads to it. You can't even get close enough to snap a picture with your camera on Zoom. It's kind of retarded, I'm sorry. It's just stupid. USDA website taken down. The Gateway Arch in St. Louis. Shuts down. Bounces rowers from Potomac. Thompson Boat Center closed in D.C. Military commissary. I'm sorry, if you're at home and your spouse is deployed and you're in the military, you get to shop at the commissary, open the damn store. That is completely unacceptable. The Grand Canyon. Why is it that we're shutting down? You want to shut down stuff? Stop taking your paycheck if you're in office. You want to get some money back? Stop funding all of the stuff at. Defund something that is not taking away the ability for our veterans, our veterans affairs, our military, parks and recreation. It's like, that's ours. Stop doing it. Here's one I thought was cool. The process of setting the debt ceiling is separate and distinct from the regular process of financing government operations. Raising the debt ceiling neither directly increases nor decreases the budget deficit. A vote to increase the debt ceiling is therefore usually seen as a formality needed to continue spending that has already been approved previously by Congress and the President. The Government Accountability Office explains, the debt limit does not control or limit the ability of the federal government to run deficits or incur obligations. Rather, it is a limit on the ability to pay obligations already incurred. The apparent redundancy of the debt ceiling has led to suggestions it should be abolished altogether. State government have different legal debt ceiling constraints, and then it goes in, and by the way, this is Wikipedia, not Fox News or CNN. States are completely separate, too, by the way. Some state governments modify their constitution to impose hard debt ceilings separate from the federal government. Some states have constitutionally forbidden all borrowing by state governments. Some territories and dependencies have also modified their own constitutions so as to forbid borrowing. Not saying the federal government shouldn't be borrowing money. It's been in debt since the beginning our country began. 2001 to 2003, debt ceiling has been increased 14 times since 1965. The frequency of debt ceiling increases is about on average. Big news there. You can look this stuff on Google. I had someone today tell me to Google everything. There's actually a picture here of every single debt ceiling increase since Reagan in 81. Tells you whether it was Congress, Republican-controlled Congress, Democrat-controlled Congress. This is not news. This is not spin. This is just facts. So, hopefully Brian calls in tonight here. My opponent. I loved last week. Oh. I also love the fact that they last week they had a chance to sit down and talk, and everybody went home for the weekend. Again, that goes back to stay there and do your job. So, let's see what we got here. Just got a message. Budget history in America. Oh, this is interesting. Caller, please jump in. You're unmuted. From the 530 area code. Here's some interesting stuff again, linked to Wikipedia. The budget of the United States government often begins, the president proposes to the Congress, which recommends funding levels for the next fiscal year, beginning October 1st. However, Congress is the body required by law to pass a budget annually and to submit the budget passed by both houses to the president for signature. Congressional decisions are governed by rules and legislation regarding the federal budget process. Budget committees set spending limits for the House and Senate committees and for appropriation subcommittees, which then approve individual appropriation bills to allocate funding for various federal programs. If Congress fails to pass an annual budget, a series of appropriation bills must be passed as stopgap measures. This is where it comes in. There's been no budget since 2009. After Congress approves appropriation bills, it says to the president, who may sign it into law or may veto it. A vetoed bill is sent back to Congress. This hasn't even gotten to the president's desk. The Senate has stepped in to do his job and essentially vetoed it. And then, of course, Congress can pass with a two-thirds majority, but only in California do we have a two-thirds supermajority. Several government agencies provide budget data and analysis. They include the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, Office of Management and Budget, U.S. Treasury Department. There are reports that the federal government is facing a series of important financing challenges. In short, tax revenue have declined significantly due to the severe recession and tax policy choices. So, the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Each year, the President of the United States submits his budget request to Congress as required by the Budget and Accounting Act of 1921. Current law requires presidents to submit a budget no earlier than the first Monday in January, no later than the first Monday in February. Typically, presidents submit budgets on the first Monday in February. The budget submission has been delayed, however, in some new president's first year when the previous president belonged to a different party. Okay. It's calculated. It's calculated largely on cash basis, that is, revenues and outlays are recognized when transactions are made. This is nothing different than what you do in your own home, just on a slightly larger level. So, actually, I'd like to bring in Scott here. And Scott. Scott Osborne. Let me get Scott. Take yourself off mute. Scott has breaking news, by the way. Okay. Where's Scott? Scott, are you there? Okay, we can't hear Scott. That's weird.
Okay, can you hear me now?
All right, we can hear Scott. What do you got for breaking news, Scotty?
The mute button in the studio got stuck or something. You know what? I've got incredible news. For those of the listeners of Contending for Truth Radio, if you've been listening for a few months, I'm kind of out of breath. You know, we've been working on trying to make a move to Texas. And Ronnie, we got breaking news. Contending for Truth Radio is moving to Texas. We just got word. My sister's got a job down there. And we're going to be moving
wow.
the family. Rodney, you know, for a long time we've been praying for this. I love Texas. This is California. This is where I was born and raised. But we've got a family that and three little girls and a lot of different concerns. You know, Rodney, we got a mess here in California when you've got kids. You've got kids. I got kids. I got nieces. And we got some mess here. And it's time to take them out. Now, doesn't mean I'll stop fighting in California. I'll be fighting in California just as well as I do now through Twitter and Facebook and connections and helping to organize and all the things that we do. But, you know, Rodney, the things that you've pointed out tonight, as I was listening to you, as you went through some of these things, what kept coming to my mind is, man, we're in a mess. We're in a mess. We got some messes, but they're not too difficult to clean up if we will just get organized. And I think we've had some really, really good news in the last couple of weeks from California. You know, we won an election that was very important. The Republican Party has decided to take a heavy stand against Common Core here in California. We've got Tim Donnelly down south, one of our congressmen here, one that I just have to praise up and down. He's my favorite. He's working hard to fight for parental sovereignty. He's working hard to fight against Common Core. But all these things, we can solve this. We can do this. It's a matter of going back, to, like you've said a million times, Rodney, how do we fix this? How do we fix it? We go back to what was working before. We know for the last 20 years, California politics and the conservative movement have just not really worked because we quit doing the things that were working before. We quit. The grassroots started sitting on the couch. We quit getting the message out right. We started allowing the left to drag us into conversations that we don't need to be dragged into. We've got candidates out there that end up running and the establishment supports them, and they're mush for candidates. Instead of good, solid men and women that we can send to Washington, D.C., and they know they're going to stand on their principles, they know what they believe, and they're going to fight for what's right. And we got a lot of squish here, Rodney, in California, but I think we're on the road to fixing it. I really do. I think California's going to wake up. I said for a long time, I really kind of hope they pass that bathroom thing, because the moment they do, then California can really understand where the left really wants to take us. And I know slowly but surely we're finding out. Nancy Pelosi, thank you so much. We got to pass the bill to find out what's in it. California's very quickly finding out what's in Obamacare. They're finding out that all those reduced prices for health care they were promised are not, they're gone. In fact, it's going to be even more. You know, I saw a story this last week where you used to be able to get health insurance if you didn't have a whole lot of money for about $40 a month on the Internet. Now it's $200. And I think sticker shock takes place in California big time, big time.
Well,
I think we're going to fix this.
Well, I think part of the other problem, too, is like part of this show tonight. Obamacare, for right or for wrong, you know, and is it good? Is it bad? Is it going to work? Is it going to fall apart? Is it going to destroy the country, fix the country, save America, destroy America? You know, that entire discussion is a completely separate discussion from the government shutdown. Congress, by constitutional law, is allowed to dictate spending and budgetary matters, yes or no, period. And everyone wants to talk whose fault it is and who shut down the government. It's like Congress authorized all spending required except for Obamacare. Now, whether that's right or wrong, that's Congress's job. If you don't like it, change Congress. You know, I pointed out last week that, you know, discussing, I had somebody tell me that they think this whole thing is a crock and we shouldn't be discussing it. Or actually somebody else was saying that, you know, why didn't we get a say in it? I told them, I said, it is. Remember when I asked you to work on 2012 elections? You know, so, but they pushed it through. It was a midnight Christmas Eve thing that they knew they had to do it before Scott Brown got sworn into office. And again, we can discuss the merits of that, but I'm just tired of hearing it's the Republicans' fault for shutting the government. That's my main point, is it's garbage. No spin to it. Congress said yes, 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 no. There. Harry Reid is the one sitting there blocking it because he's demanding, I want Obamacare included. That's not his job. By constitutional law, he doesn't get to dictate that. He can take a vote. And if the vote's no, it goes back to Congress. But what they keep doing is table it, send it back to Congress. Or he overrides it, makes a change to it, sends it back to Congress. There was no vote. And the only times there's been three or four of them where it's just 54-46, 54-46, 54-46. Send it to the president's desk. Let the president, if he doesn't want it, let him veto it. That's constitutional law. Now Obama gets his hands in it. They're saving him from having to do his job. If he doesn't want it, he said he'll veto it, then let him veto it. I want it on record. Let him veto it. We can have that fight in 2014 and 2016, and then we can decide from there whether you want to go with a – come 2014, America's going to have the chance. Do you want a Democrat or a Republican-controlled Congress and Senate? If you're on the side of Obamacare is good, then give us a Democrat-controlled legislature. If you're on the side of Obamacare is bad, give us a Republican-controlled legislature. But America will decide that in 2014. In the meantime, the argument now is you've been given money, use it. When Willie Brown was in office, he'd give us a budget. They would give us a passage with or without taxes. We didn't always like it, but it was passed. It was given. If we didn't like it, then the next time around, we'd fight to change it. But standing up and pandering on camera, pointing fingers, and Republicans are blocking the government, and no, we've given every dime required to fund the government. Veterans Affairs, National Parks, furloughed employee checks, everything else. So, you know.
And you know what, Rodney, that is so true. And that's a basic that needs to be with all of the issues. You know, we spend so much time, and I'll tell you, Rodney, I know you did, and I got really tired of one thing in the primary election and in the overall elections over the last couple of years. You and I are firm believers in Ronald Reagan's 11th Commandment. And, you know, we have, instead of standing together and taking the Democratic opponent and saying, listen, guys, this is a team they're on. Now, my opponent might not stand for every single last thing that Barack Obama does, but they as a team, the Democrats as a team, is no longer John F. Kennedy's Democratic Party. They are the party of the far left, and that's who's in control, and this is where they want to go. This is what they've been trying to do, and if you want, if that's what you want, vote for it. But you need to realize what they really stand for. Because the opponent, the Democrats, have done an excellent job of covering up what the real picture is and getting onto personal attacks, getting into ad hominem, getting into the fray of discussions so that they don't have to discuss the basic principles that we stand on. In my first year of Blog Talk Radio, I had an opportunity to talk to a lot of candidates. And I tried real hard to keep from trying to give advice. I didn't know anything about running campaigns or anything. But this last year, I have not been afraid to give advice out. And the big piece of advice I keep giving to every single person that I talk to that wants to run for office is instead of running around talking about what you believe, run around talking about why you believe it. And I'm a firm believer that we've got the Democratic Party right where we want them right now. We are seeing the effects of Obamacare. We are seeing it real time, live right now, and we've got a year away before we get to these next elections. And if these candidates will use them right, if these candidates will stay out of the fray, if these candidates will stay out of the mud, thank you, Aaron Parks, these candidates will get back on the message, that basic message. It worked. It worked in California for Ronald Reagan. This state of California hasn't demographically changed hugely to the far left in the last 30 years. That hasn't happened. Most people in California have got basic common sense principles. They just don't realize what party stands for what. You know, I saw a thing last week on a video. A guy that does a lot of videos, he kind of makes fun. He gets people on the street and he asks questions. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of Obama voters that didn't know whether he was a Republican or a Democrat. And that's what we're dealing with. And it is our candidates' responsibilities to get out and throw this and lay it out on the line. Like you just said, Rodney, here's Obamacare. We've got it. Now, is this the team you want? Is this the team you want to continue going down the road with? Common Core, is this the team you want to keep going down the road with? The way the IRS is being abused, is this the team you want to go down the road with? The way NSA is being abused, is this the team you want to go down the road with? Syria and Benghazi, Fast and Furious, is this the team you want to keep going down the road with?
See, and that's the real battle. If that's the team, then vote for it.
That's right. And you know what? Here's the thing, Rodney. That's what the left has been. They have been working real hard to accomplish the task of keeping us off those subjects, and it's working. And it's not working because they're good at it. It's working because our side's letting it happen. And I'm going to pass it back to you. I got a couple of things I got to do, so I'm going to pass it back to you. I'll be here in the background, and I'll pop into chat when I can talk again. But I'll tell you, Rodney, good show so far. So good. We're going to get some guests. We've still got our guest out there that is unmuted. If you want to speak, we thought maybe that it was Brian. It's a 530 area code guest. If you want to pop in, just pop in and let us know. I'll pass it back to you, Rodney.
All right. Thank you. You know, you made some good points. It's like, you know, arguing over the merits of health care now, we've elected these people. They are in Washington to do a job. Do the job. You don't like the result, you change it. You know, that's the bottom line. Congress said no. They said yes here, no there. Move on. Let the president veto it or not veto it, period. And, you know, this is nothing new. This has happened hundreds of times. Although one of the left blogs did actually make a good point that it's never been, it's usually used as a threat that you know is not actually going to happen. Government or the debt ceiling, there's never actually been a default. So, because they kind of never actually do it. They push for their agenda, and then they make a compromise. And that's the key thing. In every other example, they got right up to the brink, and then there's a compromise. Why has Barack Obama not said, come in here, I want to talk to you, hash it out, behind closed doors, not on camera, and go from there? So it's got a link here. And even here, it's something about the U.S. federal budget. Been criticized for spending on research and action, healthcare reform, talking about the fiscal cliff and the sequester. You know, that's one, the sequester. It's like, we can't do our job, so we're going to slash everything across the board real quick. And if you're slashing it across the board, slash it across the board. I remember, 2010. County Board of Supervisors in El Dorado County. We have a balanced budget, and we always have had one. And we're running up against an actual upcoming year working on the budget, and we were not going to have a balanced budget. It was, I believe, $1.6 million, something like that. So Supervisor Ray Netting said, this is really simple. 5% cut across the board, all departments. And then no one department gets hit with everything. 30%, 5%. Everybody cut 5%. Every department of our county. And oh my word, you had the DA come in. We can't cut 5% because blah, 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 blah. We should be exempt. Pass it on to somebody else. The public defender came in. We can't cut 5%. That's not fair, and we shouldn't be included. Senior services came in. Child support came in. Everybody's got a reason why they can't do the 5%. And fortunately, our board stood up. They didn't pander. They didn't waste time. They said, great, you don't want 5%. So, and then it's like, DA doesn't want 5%. We're going to pass it off to the public defender. You got to cut 10%. Or senior services doesn't want 10%. Child support needs to cut 10%. And they all went, what? And he went, which would you rather have? Well, in the end, they all just simply cut 5%. It was that easy. Balanced budget, let's move on. And it was amazing how easy it was for all departments to actually cut 5%. And suddenly, our county kept running with the balanced budget. Shocking how that worked. Maybe they should take a look at El Dorado County while they're discussing all this garbage in Washington. It was pretty simple. We got to cut government spending. We are way too over budgeted, and we've been complaining about it. I don't remember a time in my life that we haven't been talking about the size of government. So with that, it's pretty simple. If one group's supposed to take the pain, all groups take the pain. But when you start doing stuff like, I'm going to keep paying my staff, but I'm going to shut down military veteran services, that's where you cross the line, and it's like, who the hell do you think you are? Because that is not cool. So you got health care reform. We've been talking about this for a year. I love the fact Brian pointed out last week, this is not, and this is a key one, this is not health care reform. This is insurance reform. We need to reform healthcare. That's a huge portion of it. Brian is 100% right on that one. Let's see here. President Obama announced a 10-year 2012-2021 plan, living within our means and investing in the future. includes tax increases on the wealthy, along with cuts for future spending on defense and Medicare. Social Security was excluded from the plan. The plan included a net debt avoidance of $3.2 trillion over 10 years. If the Budget Control Act of 2011 is included, this adds another $1.2 trillion in deficit reductions for a total of $4.4 trillion. And I remember Tea Party people saying, we need to cut $60 trillion or $16 trillion or $17 trillion. It's like, okay, well, there's $4.4 trillion. Let's start there. And everyone's having a tizzy fit. It's like, you got to start small. You're not going to cut a $17 trillion debt and go to a zero balance budget in America. Shocking news, people. Sorry, it's not going to freaking happen. Never has. Never will. Get over it. But we do fight for what we can fight for. And then you get into, Obama had the living within our means and investing in the future. Paul Ryan had path to prosperity, restoring America's promise. When Obama released his version, we simply said, we don't like it, it's got problems. My God, when Paul Ryan released his, you had commercials all over TV, he's throwing grandma off a cliff. Well, apparently nobody's throwing grandma off a cliff, but we have barred grandpa from going to the World War II Memorial. So I'd love to have someone explain to me how that works. Here's an interesting link. Thank you. 1996, federal budget, $1.6 trillion. 97, $1.6 trillion. These are all submitted by Clinton. $1.7 million in 98, 99, $1.7 trillion, 2000, $1.8 trillion. It keeps going up small. $1.9 trillion in 2001 was Clinton's last budget, $2.0 trillion by Bush. Bush's final budget in 2009 was $3.1 trillion. Obama's budgets have been $3.6, $3.8, $3.7, $3.8 trillion. Those are actually just the budgets themselves. The budget year runs October 1 to September 30th, the following year submitted by the President to Congress prior to October. Oh, and actually each of those, there's an overlay too, by the way. The last budget of Clinton was the first budget of the first year of Bush's presidency, and so on. Last year of Bush's budget is the first year of Obama's budget because you're proposing it for the future year. But the problem line is, since 2009, we've gotten no budget. They've refused to put one through. So then we get the fiscal cliff. I also got some interesting data. The Bush tax cut has been a huge thing for negotiations. What's funny is I remember Bush's tax cut, you know, it's like every family got $600 back. And then I get people talking about Obama gave us a tax cut too. And this is from personal experience, looking at a paycheck that belongs to my wife. End of the year, you file your taxes, you get a $600 to $2,000 check back. All of a sudden, the Obama tax cut, this is the goofiest one. Each paycheck, you get like, you know, $3 back. That's nothing you even notice. That, you know, giving a lump sum, I know thousands of people on both sides of the aisle that took their tax cut into the year and went and bought stuff with it. It was good for the economy. Breaking it across different paychecks, that's how you sell a car, not the economy. You know, the BS behind telling people, you know, when I sell you a car, your car payment's as low as $89 a month. Or your house payment, you know, it's your house payment's only $600 a month. Of course, your $200,000 house after 30 years was like, you know, $600,000. But they still sell it to you that, you know, your payments each month are only this much. That's a sales technique. That's different than the budget. Talking about your tax break is, you know, $800 versus your tax break is $3 per pay period. They add up to the same amount, but you're going to use it differently. And then talking about what you do with it. and people don't look at that. I mean, Scott made a good point. Our party sucks at messaging. I thought Ted Cruz did do a good job on, what was her name, the radio show or TV show on CNN, and Candy Crawley, and explaining the difference with the funding of the budget, how it happens, and she didn't allow him to go into finger-pointing and garbage like that. It was just simply constitutional, what's happened, laid it out. Of course, nobody wants to listen to it. It's been running around Facebook. Everybody can find it on YouTube. Cindy Crawley / Ted Cruz. Listen to the video. I know today one of my Facebook people and saying that, show us the proof. Show us where this budget got passed. And one of my friends from Chicago posted the video. Did you? And then Jay from Eldorado Hills said, did you watch the video? No. And then he posted a Glenn Beck one. Did you watch the video? No, I'm in class. Besides that, it's Glenn Beck and he's stupid. Well, why are you afraid to watch the video? You get a break between classes, watch the video before you start opening up your mouth and telling us it's a lie. After you watch it, you can have an opinion on it. But you haven't even watched it yet. So I'm not quite sure how that happens. It's like this weekend at the convention, people running around talking rumors. You know, it's the Tea Party, for the first time, we had a Tea Party caucus. And they were allowed to come up with what they think the Republican Party should adopt. And Saturday, I get somebody tell me, Tea Party's all pissed off because they're told that they're not going to be allowed to put their resolutions forward. I'm like, where did you get that from? The resolutions are going to hit the floor Sunday morning for us to vote on. Well, but that's not what I heard. Heard from where? Look at the agenda. They passed 5 resolutions. It's going to hit the floor. Good news is they passed 5 resolutions, and all 5 of them passed unanimously. I have to say, the Tea Party caucus for its first time at the Republican State Convention, they handled themselves flawlessly. I was extremely impressed with the professionalism, the organization. They went into that room. They argued with each other. They had everybody had their opinions. Everybody had their vision, their view, what we should do. They narrowed it down, and they picked 5. All 5 of them got past our resolutions committee. All 5 of them hit the floor on Sunday. And without any arguing whatsoever, it went up. All those in favor, aye. All those opposed, crickets. And they passed. Very simple. And grab those real quick here. We have the resolutions regarding voter integrity. California Republican Party urges the California State Legislature to enact a law which requires voters to identify themselves as registered voters, whether they vote in person or by mail. Of course, that'll go into a whole new argument that somehow showing my ID for cigarettes, for driver's license, showing my ID when I get stopped by CHP, showing my ID when I go to a bar, but showing my ID when I go into an elections polling booth is somehow wrong. Even though, by the way, I did see an interesting video that I triple-checked. Obama showed his ID when he voted last time. I'm not sure what his point was in doing that, but he showed his ID. Or resolution to oppose and eliminate Common Core. Whether you approve it, you don't like it, although this one was written by my good friend Bill Evers, and I absolutely have utmost respect for him. And if anyone wants to argue Common Core, I'd love to have Bill on the show and maybe on a Tuesday night, and we'll see where it goes. So I know his wife, Anna Bryson, is actually a school board member right now in San Juan Capistrano in Orange County, and she's running for Assembly District 73. I look forward to that race immensely. Resolution opposing Agenda 21. This has been a fun one because it's been a pet peeve with how they're running Agenda 21, and everyone likes to say they're crazy Tea Party people. at some point, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking forward to the first person waking up and going, oh, my God, you mean Glenn Beck wasn't a total nutcase after all? Because it's true. Resolution opposing high-speed rail. This should have been a no-brainer. I'm glad it passed because high-speed rail, I love the fact that everybody wants to argue high-speed rail. Even the person who wrote the original initiative that we voted for, and that's California voters, Safe, Reliable, High-Speed Passenger Train Bond Act passed by California voters, Proposition 1A, November 4th, 2008, has not met the required qualifications which were voted on by the citizens of California. That is not a Republican talking point or a Fox News BS or Tea Party, tinfoil-wearing, blah, blah, blah. Even the guy who wrote the initiative says the current version of high-speed rail is bad for California, and it is not what the voters voted for. You can Google this, Proposition 1A. Read it before you try and argue about high-speed rail because it's wrong. It was a concept to build things like high-speed rail from San Francisco to L.A. It is currently from Madera to Bakersfield. Google that on the map and tell me how that helps commuters in large cities. You're going to see a bunch of cows along the way, not cities. It's no longer going through Monterey. It's going through Bob's Farm. And on top of that, it's a non-electrified version from Madera to Bakersfield. Ladies and gentlemen, a non-electrified train is called a choo-choo train. It's also known as Amtrak. It is not high-speed rail. The completion of the high-speed rail system, Phase 1, is not slated until 2028, which is significantly later than the 2020 mandated finish date. Lack of electrification fails to meet the requirement mandated in Prop 1A that the system be a usable section, and there are no provisions in Prop 1A for the current phasing of a project being proposed for non-electrification. Whereas the High-Speed Rail Authority cannot identify the necessary funding to complete high-speed rail service between Merced and San Fernando Valley. Whereas environmental documentation for the alignment through the Central Valley has not been completed and sections are currently in the litigation. So EIRs, ladies and gentlemen, they have not even done them yet. Documentation provided by the authority indicates that a trip between San Francisco and Los Angeles cannot be completed in 2 hours and 40 minutes as the original estimated price. Therefore, California Republican Party urges all action and funding be stopped until such time as an election has been held to permit the voters to reevaluate the Safe, Reliable, High-Speed Passenger Train Bond Act. That's simple. You could be for or against it, and I don't care. But if you're for it, we want it built like the voters voted for it in 2008. Not like it's currently being pushed right now. It's wrong. The other one, the referendum of AB 1266. That is the bathroom transgender bill. And at this point, I have a 14-year-old daughter. All I can say, and it's not nice, they want to stop bullying by allowing children to swap bathrooms. And I've made this point. If indeed you could convince me it is a necessary issue that will somehow prevent bullying, give them a separate bathroom. My daughter's 14. The first time some boy walks into her bathroom, and I'm personally will bet $100 against anybody, it's going to be some football player that just joined the team, and he's doing it on a dare. I'm going to be pissed. Guns don't kill people. That's what daughters do. Come on, you guys. I don't care whether you love Obama or anything else. Tell me you want your daughter in a shower after cheerleading practice, and some boy comes walking in and wants to shower next to her. Come on. Your dad, tell me you think that's a good idea. Please explain that to me. So that was also passed. And then we have resolution to support for What do we got here? Sorry. Resolution regarding split roll property taxes. According to December 2012 PPIC poll, Proposition 13 remains highly popular among likely voters. California just adopted $50 billion in new taxes, giving us the highest state sales income and gas taxes in the country. Even with Prop 13 protections, our property taxes are still the 15th highest in the nation. You know, that goes back to we're paying $150 fire fee, and I was listening to a county assessor talking about it. Hypothetically, if I sold my house in March of 2009, this bill just went into effect this last year. But they're saying it's not a tax, it's a fee, and it's backdated back to like 2008. And so I'm still getting a bill for a house I don't even live in anymore. And I do have to pay it. Otherwise, they can put a lien against my current property. And so we've already gotten three bills in the mail to pay it, and none of them are even up to current yet because they give it to us one at a time, and it's that year, this year, that. We haven't actually hit currently now. We've been paying back taxes. That just shocks me how you can even do that and not call it a tax. And that all goes back to they dropped it from, it's two-thirds if it's a tax, 50% if it's a fee, because somehow people don't seem to think fees are taxes. So all of those resolutions were passed. So I'm very excited about that. In the meantime, the Republican Party, we argued nonstop about how do we endorse candidates, how do we win elections, how do we get more voters to come to the polls, you know, and that goes back to the text message I got from somebody regarding being pissed off at Obamacare and how their insurance is going up. She is a single mom of two children, and she's going to be paying about $300 more per month for her insurance. And she wanted to know why she didn't get to have a say in that. Well, if you sit home and you don't vote because you don't like politics, then you don't get to complain about the results of it. Get up and get out and work. Period. This is really simple. Let's see here. Good. We've got Brian Dawson coming on here in a minute. He's going to be calling in. I've got to send the phone number here. So we can listen, have Brian join us. So we're going to go into our own little personal California version of Hannity and Combs that Brian can argue with me. Do we have any other callers that want to call in and talk about this, too? Because we'd love to have people's opinion. Your opinion counts. Looking at latest updates. Somebody told me they're actually going to have a meeting. If any of the listeners can verify this for me. Wednesday, there may be something happening. What that something is, I really don't actually know. Let's see here. Uh-oh. Okay, yeah. Somebody sent me a link for Fox News. I'm not going to read it. So we'll stay away from that. I'm just not willing to go into back and forth on what Fox specifically has to say. Not unless it's Eric Bolling versus Bob Beckel. That's always fun because then you're getting both sides. And as long as you're getting both sides, you can make a decision from there. But if all you're doing is reading one-sided, then you're not listening. You're not learning and you're not paying attention. Let's go back to budget. Budget history. Let's see here. historical tables of the White House. That should be interesting. Oops. Put the wrong link. There we go. I would love to have a guest come on and actually explain the how they actually come up with the numbers for budgets. Not necessarily the way the budgets are passed, but the actual numbers, where they get them from, and how they appropriate that spending. Personally, I think we ought to go back to the date when to implement a law. All laws have to fit on a cocktail napkin. No more 2,000 pages. And they have to be straightforward. I've seen both parties do stupid stuff with inserting things into bills. I saw one time a veterans appropriation bill for veterans benefits, and slid into it was $800,000 for a research grant on the actions of shrimp farming off the San Francisco coastline. And we're just looking at it going, why is that in a veterans appropriation bill? Let's see here. Flat tax. Flat tax, fair tax. Love to debate that one. We'll do that next week. I'm going to get some guests on. We want to hear your views. Current tax versus flat tax, Herman Cain's 999 fair tax. There's about 9 different versions out there on how we should be taxed, because right now, if anyone can tell me they think the IRS code at this point is actually not confusing and it's, you understand it, come on the show and explain that to all of us. Where is... Budget Authority. There we go. Scott, are you there? Night show is going on a strange curve, I realize that. I'm also sick, so I'm going slow. Coming back from L.A. with the Santa Ana winds. Here we go. So, would love to have Brian join us, because basically... The argument, we go back to the beginning, Brian wasn't here. So my basic view is Congress has the authority to pass budgets, yes or no. And did they or did they not pass a budget already? Or not a budget, the continuing resolution, because there's been no budget since 2009. They said yes to funding the government. They did not fund Obamacare. That is their constitutional legal right to do so. So they basically discussing Obamacare and pointing fingers and talking about they're blocking funding the government, they're blocking talking about the government is garbage, because they said yes. Did they not, Brian?
I need to know if I misheard you. Did you say who are you saying is using their constitutional right here? Who are you talking about?
According to the Constitution, Congress is in charge of voting for budgets.
Yes. Yeah?
Have we had a budget? Have we had a budget since 2009?
No.
Okay. So, the Obama wants Obamacare implemented. They're talking about a continuing resolution to fund the government. He wants it with Obamacare in it. But is it not constitutionally right for Congress to say yes to some things, no to others, whether we like them or not?
Well, I think that you actually lose in this case. I think the constitutionality is whether or not to actually budget items. But this is an actual legislation that has passed the House, the Senate, the presidency, and the Supreme Court. I don't believe it's constitutional to use your authority to pass a budget to get rid of a program that you can't get rid of through the legislative process. I do not. I think if you were to ask one of our founders, is that what you intended, they'd laugh in your face.
Well, see, I like to look at it as, you know, I ask my wife for a sports car, a laptop, and a sound system, and she gives me the laptop and the sound system, and I tell her, no, I want it all.
I think that is a, you know, it's funny, as I was looking at the Blog Talk description, it says no political parties, and I thought to myself, oh, Rodney can't separate himself from his party. But on this issue, all right, we've talked about this numerous times, the sky's falling, you know, people are text messaging you that because of Obamacare, because of a program that has not been implemented, their insurance is going up. So the anger is at Obama and Obamacare, when the real anger should be, and you know this just as well as I do, every private company, every industry will use any reason whatsoever to make a buck. That's it. We're talking about an industry that has constantly, the price of doing business has constantly gone up, no matter what we've done with legislation. I just think that when it comes down to with Obamacare, and I applaud the president, just like I said last time, I applaud the president. I'm not very keen on Harry Reid, but I applaud the president for saying this is democracy. You vote for it. I mean, it's past the separate powers. It's past the House, the Senate, the presidency.
Yeah. Since 1978, they've had 53 different times where they've had to discuss the debt ceiling and continuing resolutions. 29 of them with a Democrat-controlled legislature, 17 times it was a split control, 7 times GOP-controlled. Of those 53, only 26 of them were clean with no strings attached.
Oh yeah, no,
It's routinely used to negotiate a change to current policy or legislation, and modifications to it.
They should all be clean, first of all, and you know that, and we both would applaud such a thing. But I think the problem that the Republicans are facing in this is you guys picked the wrong hill to die on. That's what happened. You have the debt ceiling coming up in a month. That's a much better hill to die on than whether or not to participate in deals. Okay, 10 days. What is it? It's still a month, though, until it becomes an issue, right? 24 days? On top of that, you're looking like I told you before. I told you this personally. I told you this on your show. You lost. You lost big. And now you're all sad about it, and you got a skinny knee, and you're crying like a little kid, and you're going to take your ball home. That's what you're doing. And a vast majority of the people I talk to, Democrat, Independent, Republican, they all see it. This is how many times has the House-controlled Congress tried to repeal Obamacare? How many? 20, 30, 40, 100, 150? How about like 176? And they can't do it. So now, since you can't do it through the means that are given to you by our founding fathers and our system of government, you can't do it. And you found something you could do. You could say, well, we just won't fund it, which is a great president to say. Because not, you know, people have short-term memories. And when you really think about this, our elections are on cycles. Right now, the Republicans have the House. Sooner or later, the Democrats are going to have the House. That's why the Democrats this year didn't change the filibuster rules, even though they could, because it might affect them later, you know. And that's the thing. You're not always going to be in control. And this is a really bad avenue to go down, that we're going to just start, we won't fund that anymore. We don't like it. Even though it, you know, that defeats the whole
idea of democracy, what is the point then? You know, what's the point if we're going to go from committee to the House, to the Senate, back to the House, to the Senate, to the presidency, then have it gone over by the Supreme Court? What's the point?
Yes,
I mean,
but let's say the tables were turned.
The Democrats would be making a mockery of our democratic system.
Now, what about the fact the fight with Obamacare? You can stand on that one, but did they not authorize everything else but it? Paychecks for government employees, no 800,000 furloughs, the national parks, veteran services, and everything else.
No, I wouldn't do it. No, I wouldn't do it either. I mean, and you guys can, the Republicans can try to spin this all they want and be like, oh, we'll do everything else, but this, it still doesn't change the fact that you're making a mockery out of a democracy. I mean, it is hard enough to be a republic of this size. We are gigantic, all right? And then on top of that, you're going to have, 200-something guys, 200 people out of how many people in this country are going to make a decision that they are going to say, you know what, democracy, we didn't really like it in the first place. I mean, it's like Plato said, it has problems, you know. We have no philosopher king. I'm sorry, the right wing of the Republican Party right now is making a mockery of our system. They're turning us into an embarrassment, and it's kind of sad that, you know, more Republicans aren't standing up except for, what's his name, King from New York. I mean, that's it. That's the only one I've heard who said this isn't right. It's not right, no matter how you spin it. It ain't known your heart of heart.
King from New York is pandering to his freaking district and worried about his own butt.
And you think that every single one of these right-wing guys who want to defund Obamacare aren't doing the same exact thing, pandering to their districts?
Oh, no, I said at the beginning of the show, get off the news media, get off Twitter, get off Facebook, shut up and go do your job. The problem is that they won't do it. And, you know, you're right in that we're losing the battle because we suck at messaging.
It has nothing to do with messaging. You're losing the battle because you picked the wrong
they
course.
Passed,
that's what it comes down to.
No, here, hold on. Back, they passed an original resolution, the very first one, on September 20th, because the resolution fully fund the government while at the same time defunding Obamacare. On Friday, September 27th, the Senate stripped the defunding language out and gave it back to the House. This has been going back and forth. Then the Republicans decided, okay, we'll do this one at a time. And then they sent one down to fund military pay. Obama signed it, but then they figured, wait a minute, this one at a time thing won't work our way. And so then they have continuously – well, they've – but Congress's job is to appropriate spending. Whether you like the way it works or not, they've said there's problems with Obamacare, we're not going to fund it.
Okay, I would totally agree with you if they actually use that for everything. If they went through the billions of dollars of subsidies. Last time I heard, it's for the people, by the people. It's not for the corporation, mm-hmm. by the corporation. I'm sorry. Yeah, that analogy you just used is totally moot, all right? If you want to talk about spending, Obamacare, sorry, that's not where you start. You start with military spending. You know just as well as I do. You've got departments of the Pentagon that can't even balance their checkbook. And trust me, I'm one of those guys. I'm not a little liberal. I understand that there are things that need to happen, and I don't need to know about it, okay? I understand that. That's what keeps us safe. If you're going to talk about, well, we're using our budget power to not, you know, spend on things that are inappropriate or not going to work, well, then, you know, let's get rid of the missile defense shield that hasn't even gotten close to 10 miles from hitting the missile. Or let's get rid of the airplanes that we're still paying for that can't fly straight. You know, it's ridiculous. If you're going to play that
I'll agree with you on that one because – this is something that they don't talk about. Between sequester and the shutdown, what they decided to do is not fund things. The every time grounded our plane and our military mm-hmm. in the air. And every day a pilot is not in his plane, it will take every 7 days he's not in his plane, takes 30 days to get him back in the air. And even
yep.
with that, right now, we did not fund the F-35 Lightning. Obama stopped the funding for the F-35 Lightning, and our planes right now get our ass kicked by the other superpowers in this world because our current technology of F-18s, F-16s, cannot compete with the new MiGs. The F-35 Lightning is what we needed.
No, I have
they
no
do
clue.
To, they,
I mean,
they,
I'm not a military
they,
specialist, so I can't argue you on that, but I don't know. I think that you can't, if we are going to attempt to sit down and we're going to attempt to put away partisan politics, and we're going to use this word that likes to be tossed around, it's called common sense. All right, if we're going to use these things and really try to work on things, then there's no one in their right mind would be for letting Congress, letting a minority of Americans, how many of them? How many's in the far right wing? Like 200? You got 200 guys making decisions for overbuilding. And that just seems ridiculous to me. I mean, I don't know what more the right wing part of the party needs. I don't need it. I don't know if you guys need a civics lesson. I mean, I don't know what it is, but if you pass the House and you pass the Senate and you pass the presidency, and then on top of that, the Supreme Court says, all right, then you know what? It should be done. Now, once it's implemented a year from now, and I said this last week, you might have some data that says, hey, man, this is really bad. And then you pass a different act of legislation. But right now, it's the sky is falling. It's the insurance company.
Hold on. Let's go back to your comment because I have heard that
okay.
argument before. If you think Obamacare is so bad, then let it be implemented. Candy Crawley said this to Ted Cruz and I had on a TV show. Let it be implemented, and if it is wrong, we're going to find out about it. And even Ted Cruz didn't answer the question right, because my thought is this. If it's not right, I've put you in Washington to fix it. And I would be even more pissed if they go on the idea that it's not right, it's wrong, we're going to go ahead and let it go through, do nothing about it, and then once you're totally screwed, and then Ted did make a good comment, if it's wrong and they're right, by the time it gets to the point where it's like, okay, everyone realizes it sucks, the damage has been done. Why didn't they act before it's completely fallen apart?
Okay, well, first of all, 1 year of the legislation would not put us in such a hole that we just couldn't get out of it. on top of that, I think
if 1 year in the hole won't do that much damage, how come postponing parts of it for 1 year will?
Well, let's say that one more time. I'm sorry.
If letting it go for 1 year won't cause that much trouble if it's bad, then how come postponing parts of it that we know are bad for 1 year is that bad? That's where they're at right now. They fund the government, fund everything, but we're going to postpone pieces of it for a year.
I guess what it comes down to in this circumstance, and this is going to ruffle some of your friends' feathers, I don't negotiate with terrorists. I believe that 100%. And right now, you have a wing of your party that is behaving like terrorists. I don't mean like blowing stuff up. But it's my way or the highway. You know, it's ridiculous. I think the biggest thing here is if you let it go a year and the sky doesn't fall, think about how many people got elected on this single issue. People that, you know, technically probably shouldn't be in that job. Think about how many, Obamacare and death panels and socialized medicine and all that stuff. For how long? 4 years, just screaming at the rain, you know. And it comes down here and it's not the sky falling. I think that's the bigger risk, and I think that's why they're fighting so hard, is because this could really come and bite you in the rear end. You guys double down on this. You double down, and if you lose, it could be
yeah,
a long time.
Yeah, but see, you're just taking the opposite tack. You're saying we've doubled down, and if we lose, it's going to cost us everything. We're saying we're right, and we're doubling down, and if we're wrong, then you guys win. Fund the government, postpone portions of it for a year. A year from now, we're going the opposite tactic. We stop this portions from happening. We want to work on it. Fund everything else. A year from now, everyone goes, you guys are freaking whack. You're wrong. Then fine. Come 2014, 2016, you guys sweep the House and the Senate, and you're in control.
Think about it, Rodney. We do this. We do what you ask us to do, you know, us, you know, people who get acts of legislation passed. If we do this and we say, okay, you know, to get the crumbs from your table, we'll make this deal. Just think about how slow government's going to become. Government is already at a snail's pace. But once you set that precedent, everything I disagree with is going to go through this. Oh, we'll piecemeal it. A little bit here, a little bit there. You know, and that's not an efficient or productive way to conduct business. It's just not.
No, the efficient way to do it is to actually follow the law and have produced a budget since 2009, and then we wouldn't even be discussing continuing resolution.
And that's everybody's fault. No one's in the innocent there. It's not. Because everyone's got their pork. I mean, everybody's got their pork. Everyone's got their pet projects. Everyone wants me. You know, it's, you know, we've talked about this. They got to get reelected, you know, and it's sad. We've created a system of government, and it has evolved over 200 years. And sometimes it has evolved in good ways that we can all agree on, sometimes in bad. I mean, I still have arguments with a friend of mine about Mulberry versus Manson. I mean, that was 100 years ago. But that had hugely changed the system of government we had at the time. And its effects are still felt today. You know, it is an evolving process, and I just believe doing things like this, saying, okay, we've tried 170-something times to repeal this, and we can't do it, all right? So what we're going to do is we're just going
to and trying to repeal the entire thing that was legally passed is wrong, but taking pieces of it and saying this is wrong for America, we're going to postpone it for a year, is I have no problem with that.
No.
It'll either backfire or it won't.
I think it's wrong. I mean, I think it's a slippery slope. And I'm afraid of what happens when the Democrats, you know, control the House and the Senate and the presidency someday, because it probably will happen sooner or later. You know, I'm afraid of what that happens. You know I don't like supermajorities. I do not like the idea of the tyranny of the majority. I do not like it. And I think that we are going down a slippery slope. And the one thing that I think we've been lacking for a long time, for a very long time, is pragmatism. And it's just, you know, it's hard for me. It's really hard for me because I want to work with my neighbor. I want to be a part of a community. I want to be, you know, proud of my country. And it's stuff like this that make me just be like, oh, my, it's you know what this is? It's perfect fodder for the Daily Show. That's all it is. That's all it is. Perfect fodder for the Daily Show and for Colbert. All right? I don't know. And I wish you could put your partisan blenders on, because you say you don't have them, but I know you do. But, I mean, people use words like socialized medicine. Elizabeth Emkin used it on the show last week. There is no aspect of Obamacare that could even remotely be socialized medicine. Not one bit. It's insurance reform. It's not health care reform. And I don't know, we can butt our heads on this, but I'm proud that the president is saying no. I applaud the fact that he's saying fund the program that has been passed. And like I said, if they were really doing, you know, like, hey, you know, this is a bad thing for America, we'd be getting rid of a lot of stuff. We'd be getting rid of a lot of stuff. And it wouldn't just be, oh, NPR, or, you know, it wouldn't be that. That's pennies on the dollar. We'd be getting rid of, hey, let's try to spend $10 million to have a smaller battery for the troops, which they definitely need. Don't get me wrong. You know, but, I mean, really? What if we can't make a smaller battery and we just wasted $10 million? You know, they're not doing that. They're picking this one issue that we all know that they want to get rid of. They don't have the ability to get rid of it, so this is their last-ditch effort. This is their Alamo.
Okay, well, while you applaud the president for refusing to negotiate, on this one thing. I applaud the Republican Party on, is it fixing the government 100%? No. Should we be talking subsidies? Yes. Should we be talking about changing the tax code? Great. All of those things. But you know what? They picked one thing. They're saying, here's the line in the sand. We finally picked one. We'll get to the smaller batter later. We'll get the subsidies later, et cetera, et cetera. But here's one, and we're not going to back down.
I guess my problem is, and I wish you saw this. You guys have been so just dying to get rid of Obamacare that can you name one piece of legislation from this Congress, from the House? I don't even care if it can't pass the Senate. One piece from the House, from your Republican-controlled, you know, House of Representatives, that was worth anything. I mean, really. We have major problems in this country. We have major problems. One act of legislation that the House has passed to even attempt to attack one of the numerous looming problems we have. One. We know that they've tried to repeal Obamacare over 100 times, but we know that they have passed acts that were just for show because they were passed 5 years ago. You know, I mean, where is it that the Republican Party is actually, besides Obamacare, concerned about the welfare of the United States of America right now? I don't see any. And this is the problem the majority.
That is like a huge open-ended question.
Well, it's really not. I mean, if I was wrong, you could rattle off quite a few. But there's not. I mean,
well,
for
no,
the last
I mean, there's
12
been,
years.
Are you telling me that other than the Republican Party trying to repeal Obamacare, they have not passed any other legislation whatsoever that benefits America?
Oh, no, that actually attacks one of the problems. I mean, we can pass acts of legislation all day long that, you know, reaffirm In God We Trust on the dollar or reaffirm this. They've done that. Don't get me wrong. You know, they have done something.
No, they haven't. No, they have not.
Name one.
No.
Name one that tackles at least one of the major issues facing the United States right now.
Okay.
And don't Google that right now. I'm not next to you. Don't Google it.
What?
I'm just messing with you. You Google all you want. And I think you need a co-host because when you Google stuff, you sit there and talk, and you need someone to fill that so you can Google properly.
Yes, I've been waiting for you to call in.
Did you find one yet? Keep looking.
I'm gonna Google while you're talking. Okay, keep talking.
And that's the thing is, and I said this to you before, when the Democrats had control of the House, they didn't do anything either. The House of Representatives haven't done anything significant in a really long time, and I think that's why we have the problems we have. I mean, they've done nothing about the tax code for, 20 years, and they've done nothing about addressing, you know, anything that comes close to sustainability with our, you know, Social Security and stuff like that. I don't see in any way, shape, or form, besides Obamacare and getting rid of Obamacare, that they've done anything. Unemployment benefits?
Yep. Republican-controlled Congress extended unemployment benefits.
Yeah. And how many times has that been done in the last 8 years? That's what I'm talking about. That's a Band-Aid on a broken dam. I'm talking about, you know.
Well, no, that,
really
that is true. But hold on. No, that's a Band-Aid on a broken dam, but it is true they've done something that benefits America. They passed it. Now, granted, I like the way
you had to do that.
Newt Gingrich put it better. Extending unemployment benefits, it's not a solution. The solution would be in 99 weeks of unemployment, I could just as easily and for less money pay for you to go back to college and get a associate's degree in a different field to put you back to work.
Oh, totally. No, yep. Can I tell you a good Newt Gingrich story? It's one of my favorite ones. One of my all-time heroes is Bob Dole. Bob Dole was a statesman. He wasn't a politician. And during the, I think it was right before the shutdown in, what, 96? Dole and Gingrich are on Air Force One, all right? And Newt Gingrich is sitting there complaining about his seat. Oh, why am I sitting here? You know, this is blah, blah, blah. And Bob Dole leans over to him and says, shut the F word up. There's no such thing as a bad seat on Air Force One. I love Bob Dole.
I like that.
You know, and I think that's part of the problem that we have. And in no way, shape, or form is this just a Republican issue. It's a Republican, Democratic issue. We have lost these men and women who put, you know, the people and country before their own ambitions, the people who are statesmen, not politicians. There are so few these days. And it's sad because those are the guys and gals that made those compromises. Those are the guys and gals that worked together on bipartisan stuff. And without those types of leaders, I mean, you'd have a bunch of really hungry, ambitious people, and they'll eat their young to win another election. And it doesn't benefit the country. You know, I think that, and we've talked about this before, campaign finance reform is such an important thing to me because right now I just feel like this country was, like I said, for the people, by the people. And the people, they cannot compete with corporations when it comes to donations. So not being able to compete means that our interests are going to take a back burner. And that's a Democratic issue. That's a Republican issue. You know, they both get money from different sides. Like I was just talking with a friend of mine about labor unions. And I believe that labor unions, people who are members of a union, based on the concessions that they've gotten since their inception, they've become a special class. They are no longer still in the class of what you'd call the working man. They are union members, and they look out for their union members. They do not look out for everybody else. So anytime I see an act of legislation or a candidate who is incredibly supported by unions, I have to look and see why. What's on the table? You know, why are they supporting this act? Why are they supporting this person? Through the last 8 years of horrible, horrible budget cuts from your city to your county to the state of California, I live in California, I watched public employee unions over and over as firefighters were being laid off, as police officers were being laid off, there were secretaries demanding a raise. And they have, the concessions that they have gained has put them in a different class than the working man. They are no longer the same. And they'll toot the song and they'll play all populist. Oh, we're for all working families. But they're not. They're for union members. We have so many interests that are competing in the marketplace of Washington, D.C. And I'm afraid that, you know, my interests and my neighbors and yours, people who aren't incredibly wealthy, and, you know, you're a little more well-connected than I am, but well-connected, our interests are going to fall to the side. They don't have time. When you're busy, you know, doing legislation for Montecito because they give you a lot of money, you know, it doesn't really benefit the people in any way, shape, or form. And I can't remember, Republican or Democrat, you know, someone really standing up and doing. Every time I see someone who I believe is going to be different, the media just tears them apart. And because the media, they're all owned by like one or two companies. They have interests. They don't want this guy who's going to come into the game and do what's best for the people. You know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Every time. I mean, Ron Paul. Now, I'm always perplexed with Ron Paul because he'll say 9 things out of the 10 things he says. I'm like, yes, Ron Paul. And then there will be that 1 out of 10 where I'm just like, you are a loony bird. And so I've always been torn with the guy. But in my lifetime, I've never seen, I'm only 33, I've never seen anyone get hosed by the media as much as Ron Paul.
Yeah. So. Well, and you know what? If we even worked on 30% of Ron Paul's stuff, this country would be a hell of a lot better. Because
I agree.
I disagree with some of the stuff he says, but the bottom line is you're right. And so how do we stop that? Where, you know, the big money involved behind this stuff, because these people get elected, and then all they care about is getting reelected. You know, this goes
The only way to do anything about big money is the constitutional amendment. That's the only way. Citizens United has paved the way. The only way to get past Citizens United will be a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, what do we do if, and I personally disagree with you, that instead of letting Obamacare go into effect and then waiting for a year from now to watch it fall apart, that they're saying, we want to postpone certain portions of it for a year, and they're standing their ground saying, no, we're going to postpone it.
You've had 4 years to do that. I'm sorry. I mean, really? You know, were your leaders too busy filibustering about drones?
Well, you even said, we've had 4 years to do it, and you said they've tried to repeal it, change it, modify it, or fix it. How many times?
Over 150, I believe. I don't know the
exact. Take all 176 times that they've tried to modify it, and how many of those have had a vote in the Senate to send it to the president's desk for a yes, no, or veto?
Oh, not one.
Zero.
Not one single one. Oh, yeah. Those bad Democrats, you know. I hate to say this. All right. The term, you know.
If you guys are right, to the victor go the spoils. Yes, and right now to the victor goes the control of the House of Representatives, which is in charge of yes or no for funding for all expenditures in this country. And they've said, here's every dime you need to fund the entire government except for A, B, C, and D. Harry Reid, let it get voted on, send it to the president. If the president wants to stand his ground, veto the damn thing.
So you're
get some balls.
I guess
the camera.
I don't like things being made into a mockery. All right, if Harry Reid went to thing and they sent it to the president, you and me both know. You and me both know the president's going to vote no. He's going to veto it. So we just wasted more time. Okay? So it's either.
No, we've wasted
I don't know
how
many times
months.
I can say this.
How much time have
democracy
we wasted not sending to the president
fun.
If the Democrats are right, let the president veto it. And then come 2014, if we're right, things are going to change our way. If you're right, things are going to change their way.
If you were right, things would have changed in the last election. So, and it didn't.
Well, no. Things won't change.
No, you could have
had
it. No, you had a chance. Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this, Shane. I know you disagree with me, but blaming a weak candidate is not an excuse. You guys had your party. All these millions of and billions of Americans who, you know, Obamacare and death panels and all the other lies that were leaked out.
Yeah, No. See, but I'll stand up on this one, and I will draw a line in the sand and stand on this. Obama did not win in 2012. Because his goals for this country and his plan for Obamacare and his vision for where he wants to take this country to were right in the minds of well over the majority of Americans. Obama won re-election in 2012 because the Republican Party blew its chance to stand up and do the right thing, like put forward a correct candidate, like put forward somebody that has some cojones that can actually stand up and do their job. We blew that. But I will not sit there and have Democrats tell me Obamacare should go into effect because the voters voted in 2012 that they wanted Obamacare.
No,
51%
of
Americans did not go to the poll 51% of Americans didn't go to the polls because they don't believe in the Republican Party, and they didn't believe in Obamacare, and they stayed away from the polling place. That is not an excuse.
Just implement Obamacare. I will agree with you in one point that, yes, you know, you guys need to start getting better candidates, but that's not going to happen, all right? Republicans, yeah, you have to understand the primary process, whoever, you know, the people who dictate who's going to be the nominee on both sides, from Republican and Democrat. On the Democratic side, they are the leftists of the left because they're the most active. On the right wing, it's the rightest of the right. And then we get to watch these two guys who, once they get the nomination, two gals, whoever it is, you know, we get to see them try to fight to get to the middle. But what's been great for an incumbent president is while Republicans, and the one that hurt me the most was Newt Gingrich. I actually thought, I like a lot of what Newt Gingrich has to say. And I've always appreciated the fact that, that he would tell you what he thought, no matter what, you know, whatever the response was going to be. But in this case, he pandered, and it hurt him. And he lost a lot of respect from a lot of conservatives. Even my father-in-law, you know, is a conservative, and lost respect for Gingrich for completely going back on things that he said 5 years ago that we all know that he believes in. You have to, in the Republican primary process, go as far to the right as humanly possible, and you can't expect these guys, no matter who they are, good candidate or not, to be able to fight their way back to the center when someone's already standing there.
Okay, well then, I'll give a message to my party. Okay, quit your sniveling and your whining and step up to the plate if you want to change it. Because I see it happening right now. I see it happening in 2014. Nancy Pelosi has named David Valdeo, congressman from the Central Valley, as her number one target in America, and there's an entire group of far-right-wing people that are pissed off he supports Rubio's immigration reform that want to target him for Republican primary. Sit your butt down and shut up.
Oh.
Hashtag STFU.
I agree with you
100%. Okay, yeah.
You guys
okay.
have kicked some pretty experienced and solid legislators out of office over the last, since the Tea Party started, you know, and you've put people in their place that are empty seats, can't carry water. You know, I'm sorry. Some of these guys, I'm just
well,
like, really?
I'll give you some.
You're going to get rid of Arlen Specter for this guy? Like, come on. It doesn't make sense to me.
But at the same time, they lost Dan Lundgren's seat. But at the same time, the Republican Party blew it. We should have had Joe Miller, not Murkowski. I'll give you that one. We should not. There's no way Sharon Angle was going to beat Harry Reid.
Oh, no. No way. Sorry. Not going to happen. That guy's got way too much connections to the gaming industry. Not going to happen. I think the other problem is
more than just the gaming industry.
Here's a good example. There was a man running for the presidency on the Republican ticket that I would have voted for over Obama, and his name is John Huntsman, all right? He was a moderate Republican, fiscally conservative, tried to stay out of the social issues, and I think the reason for that is because he doesn't really want to talk about his religion. I get that. But you had a guy who was charismatic, well-spoken, probably could have given Obama a huge run for his money, if not one. And he had no chance. He had no chance because he was moderate. No chance.
I'll tell you right now. My organization, I am a true conservative, but my organization, SPAN, out of Solano County, tried to recruit John Huntsman, who does have residency in California, to run for California governor.
He has residency here?
Yes, he does. He was actually lived here most of his life. Yeah, he just wasn't willing to move back.
I got a little tip for you. I got a little tip. Scott Brown.
Yeah.
Scott Brown is thinking about running in New Hampshire. I can't remember her name. It's a woman that he'd be running against. But yeah, I think that'd be hilarious.
We've got people. We've got people like that that'll stand up and do the right thing, and they aren't in it for themselves.
Well, like Scott Brown, because he drives a truck. I'm sorry. That was like
Scott Brown, who will go out into an environment, you know, and because if you want to run for Congress, then you need to be out talking to people, not blocking behind barricades.
I'll give Scott Brown all the credit in the world. That guy went to places when he was running originally that no Republican in their right mind would have ever gone to. I mean, he was out front of what do you call it? Not Wrigley. What's their ballpark? Fenway. You know, he was out there at Fenway Park talking to the people. No Republican would have ever done that before. That's Boston. It's not the place you want to be. He did.
Well, here's
a great job
of
getting out.
And that was when he was running. Here's what is the same. He's been elected. He's not rerunning right now. And he's still out there talking to the people. That's kudos.
Yeah, no. And the reason
Tom McClintock's in office, and even when he's not running, he's still out there talking to the people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so glad Scott Brown lost, because I'll tell you what. I absolutely adore Elizabeth Warren. She is a smart lady. I like her a lot.
Why?
Why do I like Elizabeth Warren?
Mm-hmm.
Mainly on her, hold on a second, I'm putting ice in the water. Mainly on her stances when it comes to the financial industry. Also, I took one of her classes online years ago, and it was mainly about debt and debt creation and stuff like that. But she's just an incredibly smart woman. I understand that a vast majority of the things that come in front of every senator, they have no background in. I mean, maybe one or two of the things, and that's why they'll get put in different committees, you know, because that's their background. But no one is the philosopher king. No one knows that. But I enjoy smart people. I enjoy smart people. Like even Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is a brilliant guy. Wacko, but he's brilliant. And I like smart people. I like people who don't use someone's intelligence as a way to attack them. I mean, I like that. I like people who are willing to use big words, when it's required, because sometimes it is. So I like Ted Cruz.
That's why Wisconsin, which I was just in Wisconsin, and although I like the fact Scott Walker stood up and fought against the, everything he did, but as a person and as an elected official, he wants to run for president 2016. No, I won't help him.
Never.
Not at all.
Never.
On the flip side, I absolutely adore the lieutenant governor, Rebecca. And if she runs for governor of Wisconsin, I will go back to Wisconsin and help her win.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of, here's the thing. There's a lot of people throughout the country that, would be great congressmen, great senators. There's tons of people that are being begged by their parties to do it. Why would you want to run for Congress? That's my opinion. It's expensive. People don't understand this, but they get paid a lot of money. I will not say they don't get paid a lot of money, but they have to maintain two residencies. That's a lot of money. So that's, it's difficult. And why would you want to run for a chamber of government that is so dysfunctional that their approval rating hasn't been over 20% in like 20 years? It's like no matter who runs it, Republican or Democrat, the House has been a joke for a very long time. Why would you want to do that? So we're missing out on a lot of smart, active.
I'm looking for the people who are willing to run come hell or high water, because they want to actually get there and do something right, not worry about, it's been screwed up this whole time, let's do something correct.
Yeah.
And we need more people like that.
We would have to have, I play this video game called John Madden Football. I love it. I've played it for 20 years. Now, when you start a season, you have the ability to go with the rosters or do what they have, which is called a fantasy draft, where you redraft all the teams. That's what we need to have happen in Congress right now. Everybody who's playing now, sorry, you didn't do a good job. Next. know, I don't even care if the numbers stay where they are. You can have just as many Republicans. I just want someone different. Because what we have now, Democrat, Republican, pointless. I'm sorry. I have no respect for Congress anymore. I'm losing respect for the Senate. I mean, the fact, the filibuster is a great thing. And it's incredibly horrible at the same time. But I think the minute we came to a place where you could filibuster simply by signing a piece of paper saying you were going to filibuster, that's nonsense. You should. And I give Rand, you know, credit, not for what he said, but for the fact that he did it and stood there. You know, it takes a lot of guts. That's why it's rarely done, to stand there and actually filibuster. You know, we have these rules that we've changed, and, you know, the Senate tries to pretend that they're parliamentarians. And, you know, I know tons of people who have read Robert's Rules. You know, and it doesn't make you special. The filibuster is a very specific thing, and it is difficult for a reason, and it shouldn't be so easy as to sign a piece of paper. It's ridiculous. We should all expect more out of our elected officials.
But yeah, well, how do we implement that?
Can we change the stuff? How do we implement that?
Well, no, go ahead. What do you want to bring up?
No, hold on. Just how do we implement that? Besides a revolution, I don't know how. Because the only people who could change it are the very people who are benefiting from it, you know? So a revolution, in my mind, and it's not something I'm calling for. I'm just saying, you know, hypothetically, that would be the way you change it. So.
Okay, well then one small change. House passes bill, fund the government, but congressional personnel are on the same health plan.
Wait, what do you mean? Say that again.
Passing a bill, funding the government, but that congressional staff and congressional elected officials have to abide by the same rules as the rest of us in Obamacare. They're on the same program.
Or how about this? How about we just fund an act of legislation that was passed by the House and the Senate and the presidency, and found constitutional by the Supreme Court, which is conservative, by the way, why don't we just fund that program? That's my thing. You know, I mean, if we're not going to fund...
The Supreme Court did not find Obamacare to be legal. It found the portion that they tried to fight against, saying it was a tax, not a... You know, that... They went after the wrong one, because that's what the Supreme Court ruled on was that Obamacare is not a tax.
Okay. Well, either way, pass the House, pass the Senate, pass the presidency, and whoever hated it enough wasn't smart enough to get it shot down by the Supreme Court. I'll give you that.
Yes.
But either
way, real quick, Brian, hold on a second. For all of our listeners that are on the air, keep in mind, if you're listening to the show on the internet, we're about to hit 9 o'clock in about 60 seconds. 347-205-9620. You must be dialed in to continue listening, because the internet feed's going to get cut off. 347-205-9620. Okay, go ahead, Brian.
No, the other thing I wanted to talk about is, what's it called? I think it's Truth Revolt. Have you heard about this new thing?
Say what?
It's truthrevolt.org. It's an organization, a right-wing organization, to, you know, fight the left-wing media bias. And not only are they going to fight that bias, they are going to destroy people's credibility. And this is like, they actually use the word destroy. It's Ben Shapiro and David Horowitz. That's all I can find. I'm sure other people are involved. But conveniently, on their website, there's no contact me section, so you can't actually contact the organization. You can only email support@truthrevolt.org. I wanted to talk to you about this. I wanted to see what you thought about this, about destroying people. That seems a little much to me, and I think that...
If they're using the word destroy people, I'm against it, whether they're right-wing or not. I'm also against the left talking about terrorism, terrorists, jihad, and all that crap like that, negotiate with hostages, hostage takers. That's a bunch of pandering bullshit. It's a bunch of pandering bullshit. And I will tell you, if I'm tired of the left saying that they should negotiate because we're a bunch of jihadist terrorists, that's crap. And if my own party has got some group out there saying they're going to destroy people, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because destroy people is crap that people like Aaron Park do. They go after people on a personal level, and whether I agree or disagree with you, I don't go after you on a personal level. I don't like the policies Barack Obama has implemented. I don't know him enough to attack him personally for his family or his children or his own personal life. That goes right along with everybody who fights against Obama and his birth certificate, blah, 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 blah. I said it before. I don't give a damn where he was born. I care about where he's living right now, and I will not attack him or his wife or his family on a personal level, and that's crap.
No, it's always been crap. And I think that for a long time we've lost a lot of the respect we had for the office. I mean, I don't think that there, as much as Obama has gotten it, I don't think we've seen it as bad as when George Bush was in office. I mean, the vitriol, the things that people said were so disgusting and so outright wrong. I mean, I had one of my cousin's boyfriends, first time I met him, he was like 18 years old, talking about, you know, what a idiot the president was, and he's a traitor. And first of all, traitor is a huge word to me. I hate when people question another person's patriotism. And to me, that is disgusting, whether it's Republican or Democrat. You know, even worse is when you, I mean, most of the time, and this is what I find funny, most of the time, the people who will attack another person's patriotism, you know, they're usually attacking someone who served in our military in one way or another, and they themselves did not. And I've always found that so, you know,
That goes right up there with my own party. This last weekend, the Republican State Convention, okay, there's a person named Charles Munger. He's from the moderate wing of the party. We've been fighting tooth and nail over implementing various ways for the party to go in the future. A lot of people.
Yeah, Munger's got a lot of money.
Yeah, well, a lot of people viciously attack Munger. I go look at it this way. I respect Munger as a person. I've told him, and I've had the balls to tell him to his face, I disagree with your vision and your version. That doesn't mean I hate him or take your money and go play in somebody else's sandbox. We'll simply disagree. I fought him.
Yeah.
You look at my Facebook tweet. I attacked him all weekend long. Come Sunday, we sat down, had a beer together, and his first comment was, "Whew, this was a harsh convention." I said, "Yeah, but you know where I stand. I disagree, but how you doing?"
Yeah.
And we sat there and talked.
I was always taught that a person's politics is such a small fraction of who they are as people. So if you're going to dislike someone or hate them or not want to socialize with them because they believe in a different policy or they pursue a different policy, that just seems ridiculous to me. I mean, if I did that, I mean, I'm a pretty misanthropic kind of guy. I'm not really – I don't like crowds, you know. Like, if I started going and hating everyone who disagreed with me, I would be alone all the time, and that'd be sad.
Well, you and I are a prime example. You and I have been disagreeing on policy and issues for how long now? Since 2000?
A long time.
11?
Yeah. I don't think we've ever agreed on a single piece of policy. No, we do agree on one thing.
But so you are not. You are not.
The state of California.
Say what?
We both agree on a part-time legislature for the state of California. That's
absolutely
something we agree on. Yeah.
Yes, and see, and that's why I love Channing Grove. Started the convention. Absolutely love her to death, because that's one thing, part-time legislature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no reason to have a full-time legislature.
Mm-hmm. Well, full-time legislature, and we've created a environment where it's like, they get kudo points for how many things they can put out. It's like, I wrote 36 bills. Yeah, well, none of them got passed, and 35 out of 36 are absolutely stupid.
Yeah,
how about
we give them credit?
We give them credit for bills that they wrote that make sense.
Well, let's be honest. Let's give their staffers credit for the Bills hit road. I mean, because anyone who knows anything knows
Touché.
The staffers who do everything.
Oh, I will admit that 100%. I know that for a fact, that if you want something done,
you ask the staffers.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, I just think that we have, I don't know, Rodney, I've been getting really disillusioned because we have, I'm not even talking about the problems, you know, the problems we're facing in the future, you know, our debt, you know, infrastructure thing. I'm just talking about the problems we face to have a functioning and efficient democracy. And just those alone are starting to really disillusion me. And I don't know what to do. I don't know how to, you know, say it. I don't know what the answer is, you know, but it's daunting, some of the things we have before us. And if we don't make some changes, I don't think we'll be able to have the vehicles to
attack the problem. Yeah, I just thought of a weird way to, a weird analogy to look at it. Both our state and federal government, as well as education, both seem to have the same solution, as far as I'm concerned. Education, don't administrate. Or educate, don't administrate. Let the teachers do it, not a bunch of bureaucratic administrators. Kick them to the curb, let the teachers run with it. And the same thing in the government. Let the staff handle it, because we all know the people at the top don't know what they're doing.
Well, see, that kind of scares me, though. The reason that scares me is anyone who's in the age knows anything about education. Certain states dictate what's in our textbooks. All right, they're just so big,
yeah,
and they buy so many textbooks. I'm afraid of the idea of getting rid of some of the bureaucracy and allowing Texas to teach what it wants to teach. That's scary to me. You know, it's really scary, and it's one of the reasons I live in California, not Texas.
Okay, well, Scott's moving to Texas. Chuck DeVore moved to Texas, so you get to go live where you want. Okay.
No, exactly.
Side,
and I love that fact. I love that fact, and I love the idea, like, when people are like, oh, I'm going to leave California and go to Texas, and I'm like, yeah, fun with that. You know, like, it's not scary to me because, you know, this is California. When you leave, someone else will come in. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not even worried about it. We got Silicon Valley. We got another bubble to burst. It's great. And plus,
no,
you got to look
at
it from my point of view. Most of the people that are, you know, moving out of the state to go to Texas are people who don't share any way, shape, or form any kind of, you know, policies that we would have in common. So them leaving is actually beneficial to me.
Oh, I would disagree, but
how?
I think here's a better here. Well, because I, from a business perspective, I think that allowed. You know, my favorite phrase, hope's not hiring. Small business could if you got the hell out of their way. In California, government bureaucracy is so freaking out of control.
It is out of control.
They have implemented rules. They've implemented rules that just boggle the mind.
Where does Texas' economy rank next to ours? I'm curious.
Texas economy?
Because I know we've dropped. Where does it sit next to ours?
I believe we're
the seventh largest in the world. We were number five. We didn't hella drop. We're number seven.
But Brian, here's the problem. Yes, we are the seventh largest economy in the world. We used to be the fourth. Yeah. But irrespective of that, that's great. That just means we're great at exporting everything from this state, because everything in this state can't be done correctly. We even have to bring in.
We have everything in this state.
Food and everything is being brought in from out of state because of regulation. You know, but that's a whole separate subject.
Right.
I want to go back to your comment about people knowing what they're doing. This shocked me because a friend of mine made a comment to me. His name is Roy Allman. He works at the Secretary of State's office, and he wants to run for Secretary of State. But yeah,
don't do it.
Here's the funny part. I never realized this. Of the, what is there, the governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, the attorney general, controller,
mm-hmm.
advisor state. What's the
comptroller,
other one?
Comptroller, I always thought that word was funny.
No, it's controller. But
yeah.
Here's the weird part. Nobody, excluding governor, okay, nobody in their current job, in the top state offices, has had experience in that area, except for Kamala Harris for attorney general.
Yeah.
And that goes back almost 20 years.
She's a nice lady.
But Deborah Bowen has never worked for the Secretary of State's office. She's never worked in elections.
Nope.
Okay. Controller, et cetera. Right. Yeah. Ted Gaines running for insurance commissioner, but Ted Gaines actually owns an insurance company.
Isn't that a conflict of interest?
I'm not sure how that works. I would think he would have to shut it down, but the bottom line is that he has experience in that area. And I know that, not that I'm saying Roy could beat Deborah Bowen, but Roy actually works in the Secretary of State's office. He actually has knowledge in that field.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the thing is there's no way I'd be willing to gamble my gorgeous and smart five-year-old daughter that there will never be a Republican Secretary of State in the state of California for at least 15, 20 years, at least, all because of the fact of Florida in 2000. Can't let a Republican have Secretary of State. Just can't do it.
That's not true. Actually, the last time the Secretary of State enacted the most changes and laws that even the Democrats like was Bill Jones. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not talking about
a Republican.
You and me liking someone. I'm talking about the people. There's not going to be a Republican Secretary of State. All I have.
Well, no, unless no. You can't say that. A person like Bill Jones in this day and age could still win the Secretary of State's office and still do a great job. We Republicans are stupid. They put up people like Damon Dunn, a former Democrat become Republican who then became an independent, who's now a Democrat running for a city council office. Seriously?
Wasn't he a football player?
No, I don't think so.
Dunn was an athlete.
Okay.
I can't remember.
But he had no experience, and he wasn't even a Republican. He wasn't even a Republican, and then he became one, and now he's back to – then he ran for something as an independent, then he ran – now, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's a hard – I mean, you have it's so difficult and to talk to people because I'll talk to people and – we talk about something like Obamacare, and I'll get all the talking points from their party, whatever party they're part of, I'll get all the talking points. I'm like, great, you know, I already heard this on CNN and Fox News and during the debates. You know, I got all that. And, you know, you pick any issue, gun control, it's talking points, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Don't mention the
debates. That's another pet peeve of mine.
I like debates.
If Republicans want to win the presidency, here's rule number one that I'd implement on a national level. Zero televised national debates. You want to talk to the people? Go talk to the people. Get the hell off stage because they're crap. My friend Mark Billingsley from the Sacramento Bee had a great idea for a T-shirt. Swear to God, I almost want to make it. Republican presidential candidate. I attended 46 debates, and all I got was a Tea Party T-shirt.
No, I agree with you.
Okay.
If I was a Republican, or if I was running the campaign of a Republican, I would say, don't do any debates. And he'd be like, why? And I'd be like, because what you're telling people is not going to benefit you whatsoever. It's just not. Let's build a wall.
Yeah.
You know, I can go
because
down
the rest
all
of them. Because you're right. The rest of them get up there, and it's, how far to the right can I run? I don't want to hear that. I want to hear what are you going to do to fix this country, and I want to hear you say it to me in front of me while you come visit my state.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, too, is if you don't live in New Hampshire or Iowa, you don't get that. Especially for, like, presidential candidates, they don't come around and hang out in Livermore. If Livermore was in New Hampshire, they'd be hanging out all the time. But, you know, it's... and it is my, like, lifelong dream to spend at least one election season in New Hampshire. I want to see it. I want to go out to breakfast and get, you know, my back patted by a couple of candidates for president. That would be awesome. Because I've always lived in California, and we don't matter, you know. It's the only time a presidential candidate comes here is to get money, and then they leave. That's it.
Well, yeah, and even then, it's like this last time around, I think Barack came here 3 times to get money, and Romney came here 0.
Yeah, well, he's not. He wasn't wanted here. He knew that. This is not
fair territory. What if he had come here and actually, and your point's exactly right, not the biggest city in the world, but if he had come here and actually showed up at a coffee shop in Livermore?
Oh, that'd be crazy. And, you know, it's funny, if he did that, actually showed up at a coffee shop in Livermore, he'd probably win some votes he didn't have before. So many people that I know, I mean, from sociology classes into political science, you were taught, I mean, just touching the palm, flesh, touching the flesh, shaking hands, introducing yourself, you are more than likely to get that vote, especially for smaller offices. Whoever's listening, if you're running for city council, if you're running for mosquito abatement or whatever it is, whatever small little office, down ballot office you're running for, the person who reaches the most people with physical touches will win. Because, first of all, most people don't even know what those offices do, and they vote for the name they remember. If they meet you, your name will be the one they remember.
Well, not only that, but I'm a huge fan of, like, coffee clutches and stuff. It may only be 5 people in a room, but I say, hey, Brian, I want to bring my candidate to your house and invite some of your friends. You may only have five people show up.
Coffees are the best.
And then I've told every single one of my candidates, Americans are desperate. Shake your hand and talk to you face-to-face, and when you walk away, they know that handshake meant something. It transcends political lines.
Exactly. And you got to think of it like this. If you hold, say, you know, you bring your candidate to my house. The whole point of bringing them to my house is because I bring my friends who are not familiar with your candidate. Now, every person in that house that you win over will then have a coffee at their house and invite all their friends who don't know you. So, I mean, they're incredibly beneficial. Incredibly beneficial. Take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's
the difference is from a consultant, the consultant down philosophy we have happening right now, coffee clutches don't raise the money. And it's like, no, it raises the vote.
It's all about the money. I mean, it's sad. And we've talked about this. I mean, it's not even everyone who's listening knows I have an issue with money in politics. But even beyond that, money becomes such a necessary thing to a candidate that they are literally running for office the day after they win an election. And that is sad to me. I think that a lot of time that they spend doing that stuff, which they have to do if they want to stay in office, is part of the reason why the Congress, you know, doesn't get shit done anymore. Because how can these guys get together and get something of significance done when they're at some coffee or tea or big $2,500 plate dinner or, you know, whatever it is? That takes time away from legislating. And, you know, the other thing that I think we've really lost in Washington, D.C., is in the 40s and 50s, 60s, 70s, before television and the Internet really took a hold, and you had guys and gals, right-wing, left-wing, whatever, they were neighbors. They had dinner. You know, their families knew each other. It's a lot harder to call you a traitor on the floor when you had dinner at my house last week. You know, having relationships just inherently makes things more civil.
That goes back to the beginning of the show when I said, you know, I remember back when Brulte was in the office and Willie Brown, and, you know, I've always said they would get together, do what it took. We didn't always like what came out of it, but we got something done, and nobody was panning to the camera. But we could fight tooth and nail brutally on the floor, and then 5 o'clock it hit, and I remember being there, and it's like Willie Brown would go, let's go have a beer. And across the street from the Capitol at 11th and L was a place called Brannon's, and we'd go have beer. And then we'd all joke, you know, man, that was brutal today. Yeah, so what are we going to do tomorrow? You know, and hang out. But nobody got on the floor and pulled that kind of insulting crap, because you're right, we had dinner last night.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to just personally, like, you know, just rip someone to shreds when you know that your kids carpool together. Like, it's a lot harder. So, I don't know. I believe in that to one point, but I also believe that people who, I hear it all the time, I'm not, you know, the most civil guy when it comes to certain things. Like, if you say something I just inherently disagree with, I have no problem, you know, metaphorically ripping you a new one. And then people will be like, oh, you know, you should be civil. And civil, to a point, in my opinion, you know, my humble opinion, is used by the people who lose arguments. It's like, oh, you should be nicer to me, even though I'm dead wrong. It really bothers me. I think that we should be able to get into it, get passionate, get excited. I think we can stay away from things like ad hominem attacks and name callings and, you know, questioning someone's patriotism.
A prime example for you is we were flying into the Republican convention and arrived in the John Wayne Airport, and we're walking through, and there's Mariko Yamada. And she was flying home. She had been with Mariko?
Yeah.
Mariko is the assemblywoman that is in Yolo County. She took over the seat from the senator. What's her name? Oh, geez. But the district is Davis, Yolo County. Mariko Yamada, she's the only woman. Democrat, yeah. But she's a Democrat. She knows who I am. I walked up to her, and you'll like this because this affects you, and I want your help on it. Mm-hmm. But I introduced myself, and what's really funny is her daughter handles her Facebook account and all of my attacks on the liberals on Facebook and stuff like that last week. She defriended me. And so I looked at Mariko. I said, Mariko, you defriended me. She goes, I think that might have been my daughter. I went, I know. It's fun to give you a hard time. I said, but in all reality, I actually need your help. And I told her about Monique Martin for Assembly District 11. And I said, I want to hold a conference on the Delta, on the tunnel and the Delta. And we talked about the fact even she opposes the tunnel, and that we want to discuss ways to save the Delta. And her answer was, absolutely, call me. And she wants to meet Monique.
Yeah, it's the Delta with elected officials in the state of California is such a hard thing, especially when you are, you know, have ambitions for running for statewide office, because you can't win statewide office with just, you know, the support of Northern California. We just don't have the population base. You know, L.A. really carries a lot of power, and they're the ones who want the water, them in Kern County. And I used to tell people, when I drive through Kern County and I'm listening to talk radio, it's just commercial after commercial. I mean, these people are organized. They have money. And I tell everyone up here, I mean, I was doing it 5 years ago, you guys better start putting your money where your mouth is. You better start organizing. You better start putting commercials on there, because they're going to steamroll you if you don't. And they're playing their outside of Kern County. You know, they're, I don't know.
I disagree with you.
Fighting over, what's that?
I disagree with your premise that winning statewide office is contingent upon L.A. and San Francisco.
I'm not saying you have to win all of L.A.
Somebody from Northern California on one issue like the Delta, all of that is irrelevant, because Republicans used to win statewide offices like governor and lieutenant governor and secretary of state like Bill Jones, but we didn't do it by sucking up to Los Angeles. We did it by doing what the Republican Party won't do, and we just talked about it with Romney, okay? Forget New Hampshire and Iowa. Go out and talk to the people. Shake their hand. In California, any Republican, and if you're listening to the show and you're working on a campaign, you better write this down, people, okay? We used to have a thing called the fishhook. You start in Siskiyou County, and you go all the way down the eastern coast of California through El Dorado County, through Mono County, little tiny dinky county, and you go all the way down through Riverside into the tip of San Diego and hook back up into Orange County. If you do that and you shake hands and talk to voters, you will win Democrats over because they met you. Republicans will come to the polls because they met you. You can win the state of California, even though some other candidate spent a ton of money in L.A. Problem is, our Republican Party has a bunch of consultants that would rather spend their money in L.A., and we don't get to meet the candidates for statewide office. It's like pulling teeth to come see us in El Dorado County.
I did not meet a single person besides Gavin, but I know Gavin. So it's not really meeting them. And I knew Camilla. I met her. You know, I didn't meet a single candidate running for statewide office that I didn't already know on a personal level. Not one. So I'm a pretty active guy, too.
Uh-huh. Well, to his credit, or her credit, I mean, Camilla came through El Dorado County. I live in the reddest county in California.
She's a devil. She's on my list.
Yeah.
So,
there are more people, if you exclude, take the L.A. and San Francisco and block it out, and you visit all of the little rural communities and go shake hands, hit coffee shops and burger joints, and then you need approximately, the numbers have changed slightly, but between 11 and 15% in L.A. and San Francisco, and you went to statewide office.
No, definitely. I mean, I remember
the Republicans
when,
going into just L.A. and San Francisco to win a statewide office is stupid.
Tom Torkelson, when he was running for, what does he hold now? God, he's had so many education something. This is our.
Oh, it's called? Lydia Gutierrez is running for it now, and it's the office, public office, or for public,
public education.
Like
instruction. I think you're right. Anyways, he spent so much time. He lives. And I believe, like, the Antioch area. And that's where he's from. He was a science teacher there before he started running for offices. And I think that guy's, he's literally held every office you can have, you know, from the assembly to the Senate, city council, school board. And he spent so much time in Los Angeles because, you know, he was from Northern California. I mean, he's a pretty well-known name here in that, in Democratic circles. He's kind of a powerful guy. Like, I remember that race that Garamendi won. I can't remember what congressional district that was. When all the Democrats went nuts on each other, it was Joan Buchanan and Mark Deschanier and before Deschanier decided to run, he literally went to Torkelson and said, "Hey, do you want this seat? Because if you want it, I'll stay out of it." You know, so he got his blessing because he was already decided to run for state office. So that guy's up here, at least. Pretty powerful. You know, we talked about part-time legislature. I want to ask you one question.
Okay.
Do you like term limits?
No.
I don't either. I think that by the time people learn how to do the job is when the times they're told, okay, thanks, time to go. And I think that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, and that goes back to our joke that, you know, the legislators right now, you really want to get something done, you ask the staff, because they're not there long enough to learn their job. But yet I know staff members who've been there for 10 or 15 years.
Exactly.
They just keep changing. They just keep changing bosses. You know, my friend Elizabeth Watson, and I give, this is one anomaly. I give Melissa Melendez huge props. Love her to death. She's ex-Navy. She's an assemblywoman. She rocks, but her chief of staff, Elizabeth Watson, who has worked for Valdeo, has worked for Chuck DeVore, and she's a legislative person, helps write the legislation stuff. She knows her stuff. Even to this day, I, of all the people I know in the state capitol, if I really, really, really want to know what's going on, I call Elizabeth. But speaking of which, a small shout-out to her. She got hit by a car on her bike, and we're hoping she recovers quickly and gets back. Yeah, she's been laid up at her parents' house. But, you know, get well soon and hope to hear from you soon. But in the meantime, Melissa's doing an amazing job, you know, traveling all over the place. But even I give props to Connie Conway. Oh, my God, Connie is running the entire up and down the state right now. you text mm-hmm. her, and she's in five different counties in one day.
I wanted to. I wrote down, just in case, I didn't know if I was going to call or not. I might have been busy playing video games. This is my video game playing time of the night. I wrote down some ideas, and they were things that I thought that the Republican Party is lagging behind. I think a couple of them we've talked about before. In thinking about it, one of the biggest glaring weaknesses that I see in the Republican Party, not only in the state of California but nationally, is the Democrats, they really do a great job of sharing information. They have something called the van list, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, but what the van list is it's a constantly updated database of voter information, and it's made available to every Democrat running for office. So what's great about that is it helps presidential candidates, but it also helps your assembly, your congressmen, your senators, and it's constantly updated. It's got like a little scanning system, really easy to use, but the main power of it is just the sharing information. I've always felt that that's one of the areas, especially nationally, that the Republican Party has lagged behind, because I think that you've had some pretty powerful guys with some pretty awesome, you know, databases, and they want to get paid for it. And I understand that, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, having the fact that the Democrats developed VAN on their own for the specific reason was monumental for some of their victories that they've had in the last, you know, 12 years. Because I've used VAN, you know, at least 8 years ago, I think was the first time I used VAN. It's a really easy system to use. And what's great about it is you can really fine-tune your field work based on what you're getting out of the van. You know, one of the things when you're phone banking, you know, you're talking to people, you know, they might be interested. They might, you know, the hardest part, you know, I used to tell phone bankers when I ran phone banks back in the day was every once in a while you're going to pick up the phone, the guy's going to hate your guts. And it may not even be for the candidate. It may be because you called them during dinner. You know, you got to take it in stride. But some of the times, people will actually give you why they don't like the candidate, what the problem is. And that information can be incredibly useful when it comes to, you know, those last few weeks of the field push. So I think that that's one area. And it's not just about, you know, Democrats who have the technology. They are a little more advanced, I will say, as a whole, as part of the mechanism that is the Democratic Party. But there are tons of guys in Silicon Valley right now who are working for Republicans, smart guys. So you'll catch up a little bit, but you got to learn to share that information. It's got to be shared.
Oh, I agree.
You know,
I agree, and I'll counter with this. Schwarzenegger, Meg Whitman, Romney, we have the technology. Except I remember running phone bank centers when Schwarzenegger was running or when Meg Whitman was running, and it's like, I want to call for my school board candidate or I want to share this data with my assembly candidate, and you're not allowed to because some consultants make money. Yep.
You know, and
we just
thought
about that this weekend.
For those down ballot, I mean, for school board, for city council, those campaigns can't afford to buy voter lists. You just can't.
Well, you have to know what to do with the voter lists. It's not real simple. You know, I remember as Matt Rexrode from MPI, you know, from Meridian, he has a great system, and you have to have somebody that can share the information. And and Scott Osborne will tell you, and people all the way up the chain to Jim Brulte for chairman of California Republican Party will tell you, I'm one of the few people out there. I've got knowledge, and I will teach you. And I'm not because you hired me, because I want to give you that information. You know, looking into a district, like when you and I talked with AD 11, you know, the split between how many Hispanic people live in AD 11 and the percentage that actually vote and that whole.
Yeah.
And I look at if You know, in my county, there's 106,000 people eligible to vote, and 101,000 are registered to vote. That's not a big hole. But I've seen places where if it's 100,000 people eligible and only Vacaville, only 50,000 people are registered, there needs to be a get-out-the-vote push there. Looking at that detailed information, I know where to find it, and I don't keep it to myself. It's like, hey, I got some information for you need to look at. But our party sucks at sharing it because these guys want to keep the power. And it's like, no, because I am a firm believer on your point that we will never have a Republican Secretary of State or a Republican governor. We won't if all we do is hire some consultant who's worried about that candidate's race for governor. The day that someone, and I'm betting, I'm just throwing something out there that's a grapevine rumor, someone like Tim Donnelly decides he's running for governor, but he's not out for himself. He's going to go into every county in California, and he's going to go share the information he has, share the knowledge he has with his staff and everybody else, and go walk precincts with school board candidates, city council candidates, water board candidates, and get out the vote at a local level. Just saying, something revolutionary like that in California could give us back the governor's seat.
No, nothing.
But it requires it would require somebody standing up and having the balls to say it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about the grassroots. And I will say at this convention we just finished, he did a flawless job that Abel Maldonado, you never saw him. I, at that convention, and you know damn well, I never stopped moving at that convention. I was everywhere. I never saw Abel. There was a suite. There was a press conference. There was something. But I saw all of his consultants in suits looking important. On the flip side, I saw Tim Donnelly everywhere, out with the everyday lowly us, talking and chatting with people, out with all of his people in Tim Donnelly T-shirts. Everyone going, oh, you haven't met Tim yet? Here you go. He's in this room over here. Let me take you over. Tim, this person wants to meet you. Even me. Yeah. He had a press conference. He had a press conference and some couple I've never met before. I met him on the way over, and they said, I would love to meet Tim Donnelly. Great. Come with me. Let me introduce you to him. Next thing I see, I'm somewhere else doing something totally different, and here's Tim Donnelly and that couple still talking, and they're walking around with Tim, and now they're wearing Tim Donnelly shirts.
Exactly.
He didn't blow them off. He didn't blow them off because they were nobody. At this convention, he did awesome. You know it's good for a Republican when Carla Marinucci from San Francisco paper is tweeting and Facebooking about how awesome Tim Donnelly's doing. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Yep. But on the flip side, everybody in all the unions, too, know Jim Brulte is a fair and honest guy that's willing to do what it takes to bring back the Republican Party the right way. And so for the first time ever, while we also had a Tea Party caucus at the convention, we also had the SEAU and the Teachers Association there with suites and with money to help sponsor our convention. And so on Saturday morning, you were able to go meet the Builders Association, okay, the ABC. Then you were able to go over to the CPA room and meet them too. And a couple who are both teachers were there talking about the fact that the Republican Party should reach out to us because we have a lot of conservatives that may or may not be Republican, but they're conservative families. And I'm going, that's never happened before.
Well, I mean, if you look at the statistics, we've talked about this many times, I think that, you know, for victory in California, for Republicans, you got to stick to your fiscal policy. You got to stick to things that aren't social. Because the minute you start talking about social issues in California, the rightest of the right wing who are going to already vote for you anyways are going to be like, you're going to be preaching to the choir, and you're going to turn off so many independent, whether it's abortion, whether it's gay marriage, whether it's whatever social issue at the time is up in an uproar, I think that's one of the things that, I mean, look at Arnold. I mean, when you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, if I take Arnold and move him to Florida, you know what he is? He's a Democrat. That's how they view him. But here, he's stuck to his fiscal position.
Arnold Schwarzenegger gave us the largest tax increase in California history.
I'm not talking about what he did in office. I'm talking about the actual act of campaigning. He did not talk about social issues. I agree with you that he didn't do what he said he did. That's neither here nor there. I'm talking about you've got to win before you can legislate.
Well,
I love the comment I got
from an African American person at the convention running for Congress in San Bernardino County, and he said, "My personal religious beliefs, let me just put it simple. I will not beat you with my Bible unless, of course, my Bible's where I hide my money and you're trying to take it." I love that because,
yeah,
let's talk less government, less taxes, more jobs. Stop. And we'll go from there.
This is the problem, though, is there is that wing of your party that is going to require your candidates to talk about that stuff, even though that it's going to be hugely negative statewide.
And then there's people like me, gentleman named Matt. I'm not going to name last names. Matt, you know who you are.
I think I know
in Sonoma, East, in the Central Valley. You got JD. You got all kinds of people. You got Jim over in Yolo. And we all agree on one thing. The Aaron Parks, and Scott Osborne's with me, the Aaron Parks of the Republican Party need to go. You want to follow the real fight for the Republican – follow the Republican Party.
I forgot to look
him
up last week.
What?
I forgot to look up the Parks kid last week after we talked because I don't know who he is. And he sounds like someone I'd like to have a beer with.
Follow the hat on Twitter, hashtag APSTFU.
Okay. I don't Twitter
because it's a cancer in our party, and when you've got people like Doug LaMalfa, Ted and Beth Gaines, myself, and yet our own Republican little whack wing is attacking all of us when we're really trying to do the right.
What happened to you guys?
You win that one, you're right.
Didn't Reagan have some like 11th commandment? I'll not attack other Republicans. That was a really good idea. You know?
Yeah, no shit. Well, it was also his statement that I may disagree with you 80% of the time. Let's sit down and discuss the 20% we agree on.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've seen this wing of my own party will beat the hell out of somebody. And like I said, David Valdeo. David Valdeo, as far as I'm concerned, is a great congressman. His chief of staff, I think it's just chief of staff, George Andrews, is an awesome freaking guy. But Pelosi has named him the number one target in California. And if Republicans don't understand what that means, she named Pombo a target, and she took out Pombo with McNerney. She named Dan Lundgren a target and took out Dan Lundgren. She's now named Valdeo. We have a fight on our hand to keep her from getting the gavel. And for a Republican group to decide that he stands up for Second Amendment, he's an awesome guy, less taxes, less government, more jobs, and he's a great congressman. He was a great assemblyman and a senator, but they want a primary against him because he supports Mark Rubio's immigration bill. Really? 1% of what he stands for, and you're willing to give Nancy Pelosi the gavel?
Yeah,
that is
beyond stupid.
God,
I cannot stand. I'll tell you, the biggest thorn in my side, I don't care what your ideology is, single-issue voters drive me crazy. Like, I've watched people where 99% of what they believe in corresponds with what you believe.
But because they don't believe in this one thing, you throw them out like with the baby with the bathwater. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're never going to find someone who you can agree with 100%. And if there was a candidate that said 100% of what I wanted to hear, I would be really suspicious. You know? Like,
well,
beyond that,
I said with the Republican Party, when you find that perfect candidate, it's called the second coming of Christ, and it's too late to worry about politics. Okay?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
It's not happening.
Nice.
Okay?
No, it's I don't know. I think that...
Well, here, you'll love this. At the convention this weekend, I actually had the balls to stand there with a group of Liberty Caucus people who have somewhat supported me, somewhat kind of pissed at me, and I looked at them point blank, and, you know, one of the girls says, you know, Stanhope, have you decided to join us yet? I said, absolutely, I join you. She goes, join us in what? And I went, constitutional America, get back to the basics, less government, less taxes, more jobs, and then you guys keep talking. I said, and then you keep talking about how bad Romney is and how bad blah, 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 blah. I said, stop. I said, at this point, I'll take 23 Abel Maldonados, 6 Schwarzeneggers, and 12 Romneys over a 2/3 supermajority of Democrats in California who want to put a boy in my daughter's bathroom.
Hey,
and
what?
They went, what?
Who wants to put a boy in your daughter's bathroom?
The transgender bill. The bathroom bill, 1266.
Yeah, I know what the bill is.
Okay. Well, I have a problem with that.
Boy in your daughter's bathroom.
Oh, please.
But we can argue this all day long.
Okay. All I'm saying is I'm not looking for a perfect Republican.
You don't want
Republican.
Someone
I'm
with
looking
a male
for one.
Genitalia in your daughter's bathroom. Get it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know.
I'm gonna have an issue with that.
I feel the same way. Like when people like, I'm so glad. One of the reasons I love living in California is you never hear about this. But when I was in the South, prayer in school was like such a hot issue in local governments. Like it was always talked about. There should be prayer in school, and I'm like, no, there shouldn't. And I'll tell you why. I lived when I was young in a place called Salt Lake City, all right, downtown Salt Lake City. And if anyone knows about Salt Lake City, it's very Mormon. So when I was in elementary school, even though there was no prayer, every kid knew I wasn't a Mormon because they're all Mormons and all know each other. I got my rear kicked all the time because this is what it comes down to. Kids want to pick on each other, all right, and they look for any reason to do it. So why give them one? And it's just ridiculous. And why can't a kid close his eyes and say a prayer? Why do we got to make a big spectacle about it? I've never understood that. I never read in the Bible that said, hey, you got to make a show out of praying. It's ridiculous.
I agree with that, Brian. I agree with the fact that I've never read in the Bible where it's my job to judge you, and I'm not here to push my life on you, etc. But at the same time, it goes both ways. And with the transgender bill and stuff like that, trying to say it's bullying, and then I have a problem with this. We could debate the merits for years about prayer in school, and no, it shouldn't be a freaking spectacle where some kid doesn't want to pray becomes picked on. But on the flip side, I was picked on in high school. I learned to deal with it because my father told me to suck it up. Now, here's the flip side.
Yeah.
Explain to me why the Bible is not allowed in public schools in any way, shape, or form, but yet they're allowed in prison. Might be a correlation we might need to look at here.
Probably in prison. No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And I'll be the first one that I think you're speaking in huge absolutes and universal assumptions of the idea that, I mean, when I was a teenager, I saw Bibles in school. You know, maybe things are different in the last decade, but there were kids who brought their Bibles. Whatever. Never saw someone get their Bible taken away. Never saw someone say, hey, you can't wear your Jesus shirt. None of that.
You never thought with you we were a kid, but right now you can't even wear your NRA shirt to school.
Well, there's a reason for that. I mean, come on, it's called tact.
The Tuesday night radio show Parental Sovereignty started after a kid that had attended gun safety class wore his shirt to school, and they wanted to kick him out because he didn't want to take it off. That's bullshit.
What would your shirt say?
I'll tell you what. If your kid is 12 years old, I believe it. What?
What did the shirt say?
Hold on here. It was the shirt from.
Class?
Yeah, it was a firearm class NRA shirt. I'd rather have my kid. I have guns in my home. I would rather have my kid trained in proper understanding of them.
Oh, of course.
And it's an NRA shirt. It's an NRA shirt. It didn't say kill Jews or screw black people. It said NRA.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't offensive.
Well, obviously it was offensive.
We can't wear that to school. I remember when I was a kid and I went to a Seventh-day Adventist. Hold on. I went to a Seventh-day Adventist fundamentalist school. Jeff Stevens was kicked out because he was drawing little skateboard designs on his book covers. Now, granted, mm-hmm. I was at a private school that was fundamental mm-hmm. Christian, and they didn't approve mm-hmm. of the drawings because it had skulls and crossbones and what they called satanic shit on it. That's a private school.
Yeah.
But in a public school, I'm not complaining because some kid's drawing an upside-down cross, all this stuff like that. I disagree at the Tea Party. You want to fly your flag upside down, I disagree with you, but it's your choice, okay?
Well,
but at the same
time, it's not really your
choice. I'm not willing
to
kick you out.
The flag upside down is a distress symbol, and using it, you know, as a ploy of your individualism is ridiculous. It means something.
Hey,
you know,
well, I'll give you both sides. You want to fly it upside? You want to fly it upside down, and those who want to burn it. I disagree with burning it, but
this is advanced citizenship. You have to be able to. If we really believe in free speech, I mean, I wouldn't kick a kid out of class for having an NRA shirt. I mean, I'd kick a kid out of class for having an NRA shirt that said, you know, ready for the next Sandy Hook, because that'd be offensive. But I'm sure that's not what it said. I wouldn't personally do it. You have to be able to, you know, go face to face with someone whose beliefs you would spend your entire lifetime advocating against and allow them to speak. That person, that action, that thing you so disagree with every fiber of your body, and you sit there and you let that person speak, that's what the First Amendment, that's freedom of speech. You've got to be able to take it. You know, it's horrible. I mean, I hear things all the time. I went to a Tea Party rally in D.C., the big one. I can't remember. There was a couple. It was a big one. And there were signs there, signs, and there were things being said I found appalling, absolutely just appalling, un-American, in my opinion, because I believe in American values. I believe in freedom of speech. I believe in the freedom of the press. I believe in the ideas that we can have different opinions and not get put in the gulag for it.
That goes back to Cindy Sheehan in front of Bush's ranch and some signs I found
totally
personally
ridiculous.
Offensive, but, yeah.
No, and I said that. I hate the way people treat the President Bush. Whether you like the policies that the President pursues or whether you dislike them, they are still the President of the United States of America, and they deserve a certain amount of respect simply for that fact. Don't have to agree with them. Don't even have to like them. You can think they're the ugliest thing in the world, but they are President of the United States. They deserve respect. I have a hard time.
Well, we just dealt with that at the State Convention. We had it at the State Convention. I had all of my bumper stickers there. You've seen them on my Facebook page. You know, Pope's not hiring. We thought Carter sucked. And, you know, my favorite top seller, does this ass make my bumper look big? Which I think, you know, it's a little on the edge, but it's still not totally distasteful. But some guy, what's the media picks up? They didn't take pictures of my buttons. They didn't take pictures of my bumper stickers. They found one guy who apparently bought a booth, and he had a button that said the KFC Hillary meal, two fat thighs, two thick legs, and small breasts. I'm like, really? Come on.
It's disgusting.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, he took his stuff down.
It was completely patriarchal. is a fact that you would have something like that. The only people in this country whose bodies
we made him remove
them.
We made him remove them. He had to take them away.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Well, he had to take them away. But it's like, you know, the way the article was written was like, you know, we've all got that kind of stuff.
You guys are all loving it. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, no, we weren't. As a matter of fact, it was really funny. You know, the article didn't mention the controversy wasn't because some Democrat walked into our convention and said, look at this disgusting stuff, and had a media person with them. A female who is a member of the Women's Republican Federated was offended by it.
Oh, yeah.
And she wanted it removed, you know. So it's like, you don't get to beat up the whole Republican Party. And it wasn't a Tea Party person. It was a vendor who had buttons, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's a limit to, you know.
I've never understood the Tea Party, and I've never understood a lot of the things they advocate. I kind of feel like a lot of people, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's tons of people that know what they're talking about, but at the same time, there's tons of people that have no clue what they're talking about. And,
well,
you know, they use words like...
I disagree with that, and I disagree with you on that, in that my defense of the Tea Party is this. What you have is hundreds of thousands of Americans who've never been in politics before that hit a point where they, you know, I'm fed up and I'm not taking it anymore, and now they're off the couch. And this is the part the Republican Party has completely missed it, in that you don't excise the Tea Party because sometimes, they go a little bit far. And sometimes they say things you're kind of going, what? You know, the birth certificate movement, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I have found in my life, all it takes, I have walked into over 1,000 Tea Party meetings and I have spoke to them, and my message is focus and explain your situation or your reason for what you're complaining about in very concise terms. But you're talking about people who've never done this before. They're not like you and I. I look at it like, let me give you a bit of guidance. And I have found I have got some of the most amazing patriot Tea Party people who are in it to fix this country. And they understand that starts with, you know, less taxes, less government, more jobs. I've got Tea Party people that I know for a fact, they're no longer out there going, you know, Obama is a Muslim and he should die. They realize that message is stupid, and let's focus on what the real stuff is. The Constitution is a 4-page document that founded this country. I personally disagree with a whole
four
lot of
pages?
Stuff Obama's doing. The original Constitution?
Four
four pages.
On what font?
Or, I'm sorry. Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Butthead. So,
I was going to say. No,
Pelosi, okay? I mixed them up.
I get it that a bunch of people, you know, woke up one day and said, I've had enough. I find it, you got to understand that there's, in my opinion, there's no such thing as coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence. So for me, as an onlooker, looking at the situation from more of a scientific, I like to look at the numbers, you know, it's just odd to me that so many people decided to